Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and doing this series has shown me that Jake Roberts is as useful at WrestleMania as Cy Sperling, Jesse Ventura kidnapping Matilda was the funniest moment in the history of the show, and besides Paul Heyman, there isn't anybody on the roster today who can cut a better promo than Pete Rose.
I'm G. John Chase, and for all the ladies out there, you need to check out my Tinder profile. I have the looks and physique of Harvey Wimperman, I have a cock that's stiffer than a Donald Trump punch, and I last in bed about as long as a Brian Sheamus match. Oh yes. Swipe right.
I'm Carl Jones, and doing this WrestleMania list has taken quite the physical toll on me. I have the disheveled appearance of Kid Rock, my eyesight is about as useful as Ray Charles, and my weight during this period can best be described as having Aretha Franklin.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and I'm going to make this real short and real sweet. Ronda Rousey, me, you, 145-pound title, armbar versus camel toe clutch. Let's do this.
This is the panel for the 33rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us break down the top 10 WrestleManias in history. Next! Hello everyone and welcome to the 33rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside Carl Jones.
Hey yo.
G. John Chase.
Yeah!
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Sup?
And we are back today for the final part of our series, Ranking the WrestleManias, looking today at the top 10, according to me and the article that I wrote on steelchair.co.uk. For those of you who are listening to us for the first time, or even if you're not, go back and subscribe to us on iTunes at Squared Circle Gazette Radio, because you'll be able to listen to the previous two episodes we've done, talking about the bottom 10 and last week the middle 10. For those of you who haven't been able to hear the previous ones, just to kind of give you an idea about the criteria on which I kind of wrote this list and constructed it in the articles that I wrote. It's pretty much based on not just match quality and not just the ability for it to be a great standalone show, but the quality of the hype, the quality of the build, the historical significance, personal nostalgia is always going to play a part in stuff like this, as well as the critical and artistic success of the show as well. We also have your feedback to get to as well, and we're going to get to it straight away, because at number 10 is WrestleMania 30 from 2014, and I want to get to the feedback before we get to our opinions, including my own, on this one. Mifune Jackson from the Wrestling Forum says, I think that as the years go on, WrestleMania 30 will climb this list. I thought it was one of the best WrestleManias in terms of being entertaining and feeling special. While there's no Bret Austin type matches on the show, Bryan's two matches were still great and had a strong story and strong action within them. The non-wrestling portions were also very good. White Tap from the FOW message board said, I'm not saying it's the best one, but I've never felt more satisfied after a WrestleMania than 30. The journey of Daniel Bryan and everything that had to happen in order for him to end the show standing tall is one of the most bizarre and surreal stories in wrestling, and The Undertaker's streak being broken is one of those moments etched in my mind forever. Undefeated Steak from the UK Fan Forum is in, with, I'd put 30 in the top 5. I've never had so much fun watching a WrestleMania. It wasn't as good as 17 or as monumental as 3, but it should be much higher than 10th place. From the Austin Rock Hogan promo to the streak ending and the two outstanding Bryan matches, it was one of the best WrestleManias ever. T. Lynch from the FOW message board also chimes in and says, I think 30 is a top 5 WrestleMania. It's my number 3, and not just because I was there. You had Daniel Bryan having two great matches before finally getting his big moment winning the title. You had The Undertaker's streak being broken. It's also a really fun time to be a fan, as Cesaro, The Shield, and Bray Wyatt were getting a chance to shine. Couple this with the fact that HBK, Ultimate Warrior, Hogan, Rock, Austin, Triple H, and all those mentioned above were on the same show at the same time, and you have a hard time convincing me that any Mania is better other than maybe 3 or 17. And finally, Gordon the Gopher from the UK Fan Forum says, Mania 30 is top for me, easily. You have a battle royal with cool stuff and an awesome finish. Wyatt's scenery is decent and The Shield look awesome. Then consider the greatest opening of anything ever in wrestling with the three biggest stars ever, the best Mania opening match ever, sorry Bret Owen, he says, the happy ending of the Daniel Bryan story and the most shocking moment in wrestling history ever, 30 all the way to the bank, that it's so low in this list is appalling. So that's the first real strong criticism in terms of replacement that I've given. I'm curious to see what you guys think around the table, because WrestleMania 30 for me, and I did originally place this a little bit higher, but there are certain elements that I'll get into later on that made me put it here at the very beginning of the top 10, but I want to see what you guys think in terms of, have I underrated this one, or have I done a bit of a misjustice, if you will, to this?
To the first emailer's point there, I think I kind of agree with him. I can see how it's almost like a fine wine type thing. It's going to get better as it matures and possibly will go further up the list. That being said, I had it ranked at number 10 as well.
Okay.
I love both Bryan matches, though we've talked a lot about building leading into certain Manias, and the Bryan build is certainly convoluted. It's the way they get there is very haphazard in the end.
Well, they backdoored their way into it.
Basically, yeah. You don't need to go into detail about the streak and how noteworthy it is that it ended. We all watched it together and we were all, well, I suppose shocked is the best word.
Gobsmacked, honestly. Flabbergasted.
The room was just completely silent for, I'd say, a good sort of 30 seconds as we all tried to digest what we'd seen. The rest of the matches on the show, I don't think are anything to go into too much detail about, except I would say that at least for the night itself, if maybe not going forward long term, the matches were booked the way they should. Cesaro winning the Battle Royal, I was in favour of. The Shield, whilst they're put in there with, you know, the useless waste of skin and oxygen that is Glenn Jacobs, and and Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, at least it's an absolute squash, an absolute demolition, exactly what it needs to be. And I do enjoy the open, in particular the New Orleans crowd booing Hogan.
always brings a smile to your face.
It does these days. Whenever anyone disparages the Orange Goblin, it warms the cockles of my heart. But no, I put it at number 10, the same as you, but I do see an argument in later years when we've had time to properly digest it, possibly going a little bit higher.
I think you've got this a little low, high, however it depends where you've got the list upside down, I guess.
Should it be closer to 1 or 30?
Closer to 1.
Okay, there you go.
I'd say maybe it's 6, 7, something like that. I think from your perspective, maybe it's the proximity to the show and you're feeling the complete irrelevance of it now. But the build was special in its own unique kind of way with Brian.
You think so?
The way it came, I think it was...
With Brian, is this, by the way?
With Brian, okay. Yeah. Because it wasn't what they intended, and he was... the crowd did force him in there, and I think, you know, that was a special thing for Brian, and, you know, it's kind of disappointing how it turned out. I've always tried to give him the benefit of the doubt, and quite rightly, I think, you said it was already going to hell before he got injured, but you look at the elements, the opening, yeah, that's... It's hard to argue that with Rock, Austin, Hogan, that's a damn special thing. Absolutely no blowaway matches, but... A lot of good stuff, good solid throughout. Again, nitpicking, I wish they'd done a more high profile match with The Shield, because I absolutely love The Shield, and that they could do no wrong for me. But I think when you, as an overall big show, I think there's a specialness to it. I think you look back and think, yeah, goddamn, that was a really good, that was a great show. And I think, yeah, so I'm inclined to agree with the people. Just because that's the easiest thing to do in retrospect, when you can.
I myself have actually got this at number 11. It's kind of tricky. Why I kind of almost took like why my owner missing a bit of the cow's way out on this one, because I actually think in the long run I'm a bit apprehensive about it, because the immediate effect of that show a year later, it hasn't really kind of sold itself very well.
You're still feeling it, aren't you?
Yeah, still feeling it, you know. And I'm not talking about, you know, obviously the Undertaker loss. I'm talking about obviously the failed Bryan run and so on and so forth. So I want to kind of give it time for a while till I decide really where it's going to be. So I kind of like pansied out and made it the best of the rest by putting it at number 11.
Pussy.
Yeah, by my own admission. The build was a bit weird. It wasn't very kind of consistent or coherent at times,
or
but
succinct, or
the booking is what really makes this show a success, as everyone who should have gone over did go over, with, in my eyes, one exception. I think that one comment where it was like the best opener ever, I think that's a bit of a stretch. That's blatantly Bret Owen, that's the best, but I would put this match probably up there, pretty close. I think it was a really solid effort by Triple H.
I remember on the night we were actually having that discussion, weren't we? Somebody actually said, was that better than Bret and Owen? Yeah. And the consensus was, it's good, but I wouldn't say better.
Not quite. It's probably top three, maybe, in my eyes. The only result I didn't really properly agree with was Cena, Bray Wyatt, but it's not necessarily anything to do with any sort of negativity I have towards Cena. It's just I thought Bray Wyatt should have won that match heading into his first Mania. I think it didn't do him any favours losing to John Cena. And the main event was solid. I kind of feel a bit sorry about for Daniel Bryan. I got this feeling that this is going to end up a little bit like WrestleMania 10, as in his storyline is going to be second nature to something else, because like WrestleMania 10, probably a lot of people primarily remember the ladder match, and then they turn around and say, oh, it's also when Bret won the title. And I think this will be the same, where it's like, this is where the streak ended, and also this is when Bryan won the title. So it's going to be like a second tier.
Yeah, I was going to say,
of which, we need to talk about the ending of the streak more, because as we say on the immediate
when it happened, it was just the crowd. It was stunned silence, a little confusion, trying to take it in. I think that was it. It was trying to assimilate this information we'd just taken in. But I can't remember. It was by the time I'd driven back to where I live, and I texted you, Liam. Was it the next morning? I can't remember. But just thinking about it, God damn, be able to get that reaction out of people.
Oh yeah,
in the works pro wrestling. In of itself is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
A genuine sporting reaction.
Especially in the way that we all like to think that we know a bit more than we do now. So for us to sort of be worked in that sense is, whilst at the time I was in shock thinking about it, now I can see from us all around the table, we've all sort of got wry smiles as they think, yeah, they pulled the wool over our eyes, and we like to think we're all smart.
Yeah,
I don't think it was even pulling the wool. I think it was just after so long, you just don't think it's going to happen. I didn't until Taker was retiring, or you know, in my mind it was certain he was retiring. He would never lose. Not really believing it until I think that was the thing. Until it was a big money thing, which obviously they decided Lesnar was, and they've you know, credit to him, at least they've. Since then, they've protected Lesnar and used him beautifully.
That moment, it will stand out as being one of the key moments ever in WrestleMania, because, I mean, it took essentially 22 years to build up to. That's what we've been watching. 22 years, that's the majority of the 30 WrestleManias we've been watching. Everybody, I don't know if you can think of the last time you could probably guess this happened, but the last time where pretty much everybody who was in that arena or watching on TV was all feeling and thinking the exact same thing at the same time. I can't think of the last time.
The thing to me, and we've talked about a lot of the pluses on this show, I just want to kind of give a little bit of a justification, not to try and explain myself or explain this positioning away. The other thing I actually want to mention is I thought the production on this show was awesome, between the fantastic Daniel Bryan music video they played at the start to Monster, that the intro for Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton with the live bands I thought was fantastic as well. But when I look at this show, for all the good, and as a standalone show, I can see, you know, if that's how people want to rate the show, as standalone, pure entertainment, I can totally see it. Everything that was good about this show went to shit within 3 months, which is the big thing for me. But Bray didn't leave this feud with anything. Daniel Bryan was booked into oblivion after this, and look where he is now.
And who was he put up against?
Kane, your boy.
Glenn Jacobs.
Yeah, but he's got a mask on, Carl. I thought Cena and Wyatt dragged. I didn't like that as a match that much. The hype and build to this WrestleMania, apart from the fluky Daniel Bryan thing they backdoored their way into completely, the hype for everything else was terrible on this show. Even comparing this to like WrestleMania 10 and WrestleMania 20, the anniversaries, they didn't focus on the anniversary and the build-up, and there was no focus on tradition and the hype, nothing like that. Looking at the individual programs, it's like Cena and Wyatt feud never absolutely nothing, really. It's some subjective bullshit. Taker and Lesnar had no reason to be bad in the build-up. They had a history. They could have done so much, and they didn't. This isn't even getting to the fact that before the streak ended, that match as well was really bad. And it's like, everything about this show that you can like is standalone in its own little bubble. It's a standalone show, very good, but right now I just can't place it that high. Moving on to number 9 in the list, WrestleMania 28 from 2012. And that's interesting, because this is where we can start making the comparisons from WrestleMania to WrestleMania, because obviously this one being rated above 30 got raised the ire of a few people. I want to talk about the pros of this show. This is skewed somewhat, and I'll hold my hands up to this. I was there live and in person, so that does skew my opinion somewhat. But I also think that in terms of build, this was the best build for a WrestleMania since 23. I thought that the build-up to the Cena Rock match over the course of a year, the promos they did on Raw, the videos they did, it was just absolutely awesome. That they did such a good job. This was either the best or the second best, depending on who you want to listen to, by rating the history of WrestleMania, based on the build for Rock and Cena. The Taker Triple H Hell in a Cell build was also really good, with the addition of Shawn Michaels heading into WrestleMania. Greatness on the show. I thought the production of the show, again, was fantastic. Punk and Jericho was a really good match. Rock and Cena was... I enjoyed that tremendously. And again, being there live, I thought it was the right finish to have the Rock go over. It was the only finish you could do in that building. And from a live perspective, having Rock win absolutely made the show. It was a show that really kind of... It kind of stands out like a sore thumb to me in this kind of quagmire of 24 to 29 as the one that you actually cared about, because you really wanted to see the main event. From a negative perspective, obviously you got the Daniel Bryan 18-second fiasco, which from a live perspective... The first half of the show, they were flat until Hell in a Cell. The rest of the first half of the card was pretty average. And I prefer the Taker Triple H match from 27 to 28. I'm the biggest Shawn Michaels fan in the world, but the referee agonizing over whether or not to count the three or whatever, it didn't really do a lot for me. It was a good match still. I think it was a very good match, but in terms of an all-time classic, I wouldn't put it on that level by any means. But to me, this show is really all about Rock and Cena. And after all the incredible build, it gave you exactly what you wanted. You wanted to see The Rock back. The promos on Raw, like I said, where they were kind of, to use a Terry Funk term, borderlining on each other with all these kind of little jabs, The Rock talking about his divorce and you know, Cena mocking the crib notes and all that stuff on Rock's wrist. Three matches that you were looking forward to the most going in, delivered. I think the build-up to Punk Jericho was underwhelming, but overall, this was a really fun WrestleMania in the build-up and on the show. I think it delivered.
I can understand why you put it up there. I mean, I've never been to a WrestleMania personally myself, so I can't really kind of gauge that at all or even kind of counterpoint it. All I can say is, obviously, I myself didn't have it in the top 10. Between 25 and 29, I think this is the best one. But from a personal standpoint, I think 24 and 30 are better. My main issue with this one, I think you're right in terms of the build, in particular the Rock scene, the fact that they spent actually longer than a year, because they even started that before 27 as well. Looking at the undercard, I mean, Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, obviously, I was pissed off with after not getting my match the previous year. I now get like an 18-second one. And the rest of the undercard is just kind of dross. And I agree with you on the Undertaker Triple H, as I preferred the first match and the finish. It was a lot more intriguing, and I actually thought, considering he's supposed to be the referee, I thought Shawn Michaels took a lot away from that match. I think he was very much a big distraction. He was fantastic as a referee, but really it's supposed to be about the two participants. I was disappointed with Jericho's return, but you know, coming back with just, you know, a flashing jacket doesn't really like insinuate a gimmick change. So whilst the match is good itself, and I think it's probably the high point of Punk's Mania matches, because I'd rate this higher than the Undertaker one personally. Rock Cena, I enjoyed, obviously, because I liked the result and so on. I thought it was a good match. You know, the three matches are good, but they don't really kind of blow me away. So I personally couldn't have them in my top 10.
Okay,
a little high for me as well. But if I'd have seen Rock beat Cena live, I probably would have ranked it number one, I think. So yeah, nothing else. No, just obviously the 18-second debacle with Bryan was not a good feeling. But you know, at least how did that go down? By the way,
lead balloon. Everybody was, because the thing is, when they actually did the bro kick, everyone was like, it was like a big reaction for the kick, and there was like silence when he went for the cover. And I remember being the only person making any noise. I said, "That's the finish," and then just like hearing everybody like, "Oh," and you could sense in the building that the crowd didn't pick up until Hell in a Cell. Like the crowd was like, they were kind of going through the motions, they're kind of into it, but all anybody could talk about for the first half in the building was Daniel Bryan getting fucked over.
Just to piggyback off your earlier comments, the build to Rock Cena is fantastic and far superior to what they would go on to do for the follow up.
Jesus Christ.
And the interesting thing about Rock and Cena is it has that sort of tribal element to it that we sort of associate with sports, I think, in the sense of you've got the old guard who are the Rock fans, who we all grew up with the Rock and we loved him, thought he was fantastic and reminded us of a time that we think was, well, a time where the business was hot, and we just look back on a lot more fondly than we do sort of the present tense. And the way that the crowd reacts, obviously, in Florida going absolutely ape shit just adds to that spectacle of it all. I seem to be on an island all to myself when it comes to Triple H and the Undertaker. I prefer this match to the one from the previous year.
Yeah?
I do. I won't go into great detail about why I didn't like
it. Was it for the use of Metallica in the intro?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that, I'll be honest. But
Fortune fee.
But I did enjoy it a lot more. Michaels didn't really detract for me. That has, you mentioned about Triple H and the Tombstone from the previous year. This year, with the super kick and the pedigree,
there weren't a
few people that didn't think the street.
Oh no, everybody in the crowd did. Everybody just lost their mind.
I'm sure they must have eaten that up. Again, Punk Jericho, you mentioned the build's poor, but the match is fine. To G's point about this being a three-match card and that being a reason why he couldn't have it in a top 10. A three-match card with a Mania is a lot more than you would get with a lot of other Manias, which I think we're going to get to with one or two that may be mentioned later on, perhaps.
Go ahead.
The only thing I quickly want to say about the Cena Rock build, maybe it's my memory distorting things, but I just distinctly remember being underwhelmed for the start of it, definitely, anyway, with the promos. They just didn't... It was almost like they were scared to go all out of Rock on burying Cena.
Yeah, it felt like they were kind of holding Rock back a little bit and having Cena kind of out talk him on a few occasions.
Yeah, and
by design.
Yeah, and that's anything that does stick in my head as a huge, like yourselves, a Rock fan from, you know, when he became the Rock. I wanted to see him spear John Cena with his tongue. No, that sounds but yeah, so that's the one thing I'm probably not as hot on as maybe that you said yourself here. So.
Okay, fair enough. We're getting back to the feedback here. A good helmet from Pro Wrestling Only says, WrestleMania 28 has its flaws, but we revisited the show last year on the Place to Be Network podcast, and Jericho, Punk, and Rock Cena held up well. Cena Rock had the focused backwork, a hot crowd, and a memorable finish. The match the next year was horrible, but 28 stood up on a rewatch. Triple H Taker live felt better than Triple H Taker 1, but I get the criticisms with the melodrama when watching it on tape. Kane Orton feels better on tape than in the stadium. People were dead and still pissed at the Daniel Bryan situation, which feels like a Mania moment for all the wrong reasons. Big Vic from TPWW Forums says the only problem I have with this WrestleMania is that Big Show versus Cody should have went 18 seconds, not Bryan and Sheamus. Which actually would have made sense with it, the whole build-up of Big Show embarrassments at WrestleMania previously. Cruel from TheWrestlingForum.com says, I thought 28 was pretty meh. Punk versus Joker was good, and Taker versus Triple H was grand. That's about it. Fox Piss from the UK Fan Forum says, I have 28 higher. The setting looks beautiful in daylight and holds up at night. Biggest main event that could possibly happen. World title defended in a cracking match and a rematch from last year's match of the night in the Hell in a Cell with a continued storyline and a huge talking point opener. Moving along now to the WrestleMania I had slotted in number 8, this being WrestleMania 20 from 2004. A fantastic show in terms of the hype going in. I thought the build up to this WrestleMania was one of the best. In terms of this is the first time we saw the logo hanging in the arenas for about a straight year. There were so many videos promoting the tradition of WrestleMania. I thought the hype for the matches itself, Goldberg, Lesnar was great. The build up to The Undertaker's return was great. Yeah, Eddie and Angle had a great build up too on SmackDown. Like, Eddie's got his hands behind his back and Angle comes out and slowly tapes him before he beats the fuck out of Eddie Guerrero and talks about how he's a bad champion because he was a drug addict and all that stuff. In terms of the show itself, the main event is awesome. I love that main event. Fantastic triple threat match. Eddie and Angle was a good match. Rock and Foley versus Evolution was an absolute blast. The entrance for The Undertaker was really good. One of the things I find really kind of tough to gauge with WrestleMania here is that so much of why this had such sentimental value for people at the time is obviously the Chris Benoit finish and the Eddie Guerrero hug at the end. In terms of kind of how that's changed over the course of time, makes it really hard because now, we're talking about WrestleMania 13, the fuzzy feelings people have for the Daniel Bryan situation. It was the exact same in 2004 for Chris Benoit, but look how that's been kind of perverted over time.
Yeah, man, I just think, imagine if Bryan goes and kills the Bella Twins.
He'd be a fucking hero. So you've got that element, which kind of makes it hard to kind of rank from an emotional perspective. Taker and Kane, after all the build sucked ass because it was Taker and Kane. Goldberg and Lesnar obviously is the big disaster on this show, with Lesnar and Goldberg both leaving after this show. And there is a lot of filler. Yeah, there's a lot of people on the undercard that just kind of clog up the card. To me though, the reason why this one it does belong in the top 10 in my opinion. It felt special immediately when the show began. It felt so special just because of the build-up, just because of how novel it felt. Madison Square Garden, everything that was tied into it. If everything on this card delivered to its utmost potential, I really think this could be a top three WrestleMania. But Eddie and Angle was not the classic I think that it could have been. Goldberg and Lesnar, which could have been great if Lesnar cared, and Goldberg cared, was what it was. It was kind of a bit of a... it was a farce.
It's one of those where I found it difficult to sort of rank in the sense of, much to your point, does what happened with Benoit afterwards leave a sour taste and take the gloss of it? And it does to an extent. There's no way you can look past that, I don't think. So I'd be curious to see where the emailers have placed it in that sense. But as a match, it's really good. JR on the call is fantastic.
Oh, he's trying his heart out on this show.
Absolutely brilliant throughout. You have that sort of that nice element of seeing The Rock back. Him and Foley against the other three members of Evolution is, it's not a classic, but it's enjoyable. I think Flair is fantastic.
Steals the show. He's great.
Lesnar and Goldberg that you referenced there, at least the crowd make it interesting to watch for a while. There is a lot of filler, like you say. I'm not a fan of the multi-man tag matches for both tag belts. And the cruiserweight match seems like a bit of a cluster to me, really. I think some people may enjoy that a bit more than I do.
Yeah, I like that match.
Eddie and Angle I enjoyed, but I think they had a better match at SummerSlam later in the year, in my opinion. But much like you say, the build is fantastic. It's one that I had a little difficulty placing because of the Benoit stuff, but I'm curious to see what the emailers think and what Kieran and G think on that one.
Yeah, it's probably a good time to talk about this... The use of the future in this list, really, because from my personal perspective, I wouldn't mark a show down for what happened after it. But if the effect of the show is beneficial, then I'd mark a show up. If you get me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I wouldn't use the post, because at the end of the day, a show is, it's the pay-per-view. So it's the build, absolutely, because the build is part of the show. The build is the self of the show. Afterwards, well, you've also got a book afterwards as well, so that's, you know, and that's not the show's fault. So for me, for Benoit, I think you enjoy, I don't mark it down for what Benoit did.
Neither do I particularly. I just think it's, like I said, that emotional attachment.
No, absolutely, I can definitely see that, because it was such a warm feeling to see Eddie and Benoit at the end. It was like, god damn it, that was special. And
yeah,
it's funny looking back now, I've been thinking, is watching these WrestleManias back, how, you know, it was their time. It was Benoit and Eddie's time to get the. It was their year, I guess. God damn it, Benoit was fucking an awesome wrestler.
He was great.
I thought
Shane and Sean had a great match.
I'm going to talk about Sean a lot more as we go forward. So
I know.
I'm tempering my Sean comments. I thoroughly enjoyed. But at the end of the show, I thoroughly enjoyed the show. Disappointing is probably the right word for Eddie and Angle, because. Goddamn, Kurt Angle, probably the most naturally gifted wrestler. And they did the gimmick with the boot. Really, it was massively enjoyable. So, double thumbs up for me at the time. And
fair placement here, do you think?
I think, yeah, pretty fair, I think, yeah. Overall, I think, I'm happy with it, yeah.
Okay.
To be honest, I've had a bit of difficulty with this one. Preliminarily had 20 at number 7 on my list, so I'm not actually too far off from yourself. I certainly, in my personal opinion, rate this as my favourite of the Madison Square Garden Manias, just from an overall show consistency. I agree with Carl in most part with the tag team matches. They're just there to fit people on the card, really, like Rob Van Dam and Booker T. I thought Cena Big Show was a solid opener. Thought Christian Jericho was quite interesting match at the time.
Yeah, didn't get that over. Good point.
Yeah, because I thought that was actually a really solid match, and surprised with the Trish heel turn at the end. I remember at the time just not expecting that. Goldberg Brock. I think the easiest way to describe that is it's a spectacle. And so, because it's not a great match at all, but it is something worth watching. It's not, when you're watching the show entirety, or if you're watching the highlights, don't skip it, because it is entertaining to watch, just because of just how bad the scenario is.
Dude, a rhino getting colonic irrigation is a spectacle. It's not something I want to watch.
But I think the key thing, particularly you know, with the brand extension and so on, us getting two title matches for quite well from 19 through to 29. It's like, do both of the title matches deliver? And you know, with 21, which I'll go into later, I feel doesn't. While in this case, I feel they both absolutely delivered. Obviously, the Eddie Guerrero Kurt, I always kind of remember that match being good but not excellent. But when I watched it back today. Actually, that's a really good match. If you actually watch it back, it's really good. And I kind of quite liked the finish to it with the whole boot. I thought it was quite very typical Eddie Guerrero finish. I don't remember like 2004 being too great. You know, like Benoit kind of immediately goes into like, you know, facing Kane and so on. And Eddie Guerrero's run doesn't last much longer, and they end up giving it to JBL. So I remember up until kind of Mania time, Mania 21, 2004 being pretty poor.
Oh, shit.
But post Brock, SmackDown, I thought, really suffered.
Fucking awful.
From 19 to 29, one of only two manias where I thought both main events delivered.
All right, moving on to what you guys think. Benjamin Kicks from Pro Wrestling Only says, I remember the show being really long, but looking at the card now, there's nothing really bad on it. I don't know about that. John Cena's first mania moment is cool. Christian Jericho is great. The Cruiserweight Open and Rock and Foley vs. Evolution are both a lot of fun. Lesnar Goldberg is shit, but the crowd makes it interesting. The Return of the Dead Man is a great spectacle, and the main event is great too. Mifune Jackson from the Wrestling Forum also chimed in with this and said, WrestleMania 20 is the one that I'd put higher. I thought this was a great show with an incredible main event. Goldberg Lesnar sucks as a match, but it's an interesting spectacle, is that word again, that I can't turn away from because of the crowd. The Maestro from the UK Fan Forum says, 20 shouldn't be as high. As much as I enjoyed a few of the matches, the rest of the card was pretty average. Had that feel of 16 where they threw too many people on the card, and Brock Goldberg will forever be remembered as one of the most disappointing matches ever. Rossi Vegas from the F4W message board says, 20 is easily the most overrated WrestleMania in history, and this is coming from someone who was there and bored off their ass for a lot of the show. I still remember how excited our group were for the show on the hotel shuttle driving into New York, talking about how great Taker came and Lesnar Goldberg were going to be.
Oh, God.
Ivan Butterfly from the F4W board responds to him here and says, If you went into that show expecting a good Taker versus Kane match, that's your own fault. That match was all about the spectacle of Taker's reboot into the dark side gimmick for me, and you've been harsh to only have it at number 8. I have it myself at number 3. So a lot of mixed opinion there in terms of where WrestleMania 20 places in the grand scheme. Moving on now to the next one on the list that I believe was a little better than WrestleMania 20, and that is WrestleMania 23 from 2007, which lands at number 7. In terms of pros, the point that you mentioned there, G, about two title matches that deliver, I thought that this is one of the more exemplary cases of that, with Shawn Michaels and John Cena in the main event in a match that I think is actually pretty underrated. It's a really good main event match. I enjoyed it a hell of a lot. Taker Batista was a great surprise as well in terms of the expectations going in for that. Really delivered. Awesome build up again going into the hair versus hair match. This was the best stuff that Vince did in years. The stuff on Raw where he's, you know, Steve Austin asks him what he thinks about bald people, and then he looks over and Bobby Lashley's staring at him like he's going to kill him. It was just fantastic. The whole match was fun production, you know. You got the barbershop chair getting its own ring entrance, which, you know, it's something Jack Swagger doesn't even get at 29. What drew you to this show, and this did do the highest buy rate apparently of any WrestleMania in history, everything you paid for delivered. The Money in the Bank was also really, really hot on this show as well, with Mr. Kennedy getting the Duke. A lot of filler on this show that really doesn't mean anything. The ECW match doesn't really do anything. Kane Carly on this show is
worse.
Yeah, Kane Carly on this show is terrible, as we all know. Again, I don't really know whether to hold this against it, but there really were no long-term implications to this show because, like I said, no real focus on any kind of new stars or anything like that. The guys that they did try and put the focus on all fell to crap and ended up not being the next crop of new guys as they perhaps may have been intended to be when this card was put together. So again, I don't even want to hold that against it. It's a standalone show. This is really, really good.
From the standpoint of your list, I think you've got it a little bit low on there. Personally, myself, I've got it a lot higher. Like a lot higher on my list. I originally had it at number 6, and it kind of bothered me a little bit. I'm thinking back on it, and I ended up watching the show again very recently to prepare for this podcast, and I kind of realised how much I love this show to the point that it's right up there for me. I've actually placed it now at number 2 on my list. It's the majority of the show is great, and really, like, in terms of like the absolute dross, the stuff that even I can't defend, you know, Kane and Carly and the Divas match, they basically equal like 8 minutes of time on the show, which is really nothing. You know, you can easily, you know, go and get a drink or some food,
but
in
a
that
lifetime
time
in painful memories.
Oh, absolutely. But it's nothing to you know, nothing that's going to ruin a show, you know, 8 minutes out of a 4-hour show. But and yeah, if you didn't like the ECW match, is fair enough. I just thought, you know, considering how short it is, I thought it was just a fun little match to have in there. It's about just under 8 minutes. Yeah. So it's just
it
a lot
longer because the crowd didn't care at all.
Yeah, well, yeah, because it was following the Undertaker Batista. I thought, you know, I thought the United States title match, I thought, was pretty solid. It was the first time I took MVP anywhere near close to serious. Personally, I think this is my favorite of the Money in the Bank matches. Not just because I was happy of the winner at the time, but also, you know, Edge and Randy Orton being in it, the Hardys, well, Jeff in particular returning and being in this match made a big difference for it. You know, comedy stuff with Booker T as well, which is all good. Undertaker Batista, for me, being Batista's best performance at a Mania ever, and actually one of my favourite Undertaker performances as well, outside of his matches with Shawn Michaels. You're absolutely right with the battle of the billionaires. I was actually quite probably interested in that match the most when I was watching it back, because I thought Lashley and Umaga did a really good job. I thought it was an entertaining match. Some couple of sick bumps, particularly by Umaga. It was just a really entertaining match. And Cena Shawn Michaels just being a great main event. Obviously, at the time, I was disappointed with the result, but and not necessarily because I thought John Cena should lose. It's because I really thought this was Shawn Michaels' time to actually get some sort of mini run with the belt, even if it was just through till the summer. I thought Shawn Michaels deserved it. This is the ultimate of that 10-year period. This is the ultimate one. This is the one that absolutely delivered more than any other show in terms of the main events being fantastic matches. And I just love the overall show. I love the whole pacing. I love that it's the first and last match that get the most amount of time, which is where all the best talent is, essentially. Everything was paced right, and even with, you know, having Kane Carly on the show, it's very brief.
I don't obviously like this Money in the Bank match as much as most people. I felt it was really spotty.
I don't like it as much as the previous two or the one after, to be quite honest.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Fine. That's
good. It's not just you.
Yeah, I mean, forgetting Kennedy in retrospect was the winner. I mean, at the time, he was probably the right winner.
He was.
Yeah. But I thought it was sloppy, dangerous. There was guys getting busted all over the shop for meaningless, for no reason really. So not as big a fan of that as some people. Sean and Cena was fantastic, and watching this back and watching the Sean performance was just it's a masterclass. The guy is the babyface in the match, but for the sake of the structure of the match, when he's on offense, he works heel, subtle heel, and he's so fucking good.
Yeah,
and at the time it was, I think most people probably, and rightfully so, it was 90% Sean, but goddamn, Cena is fantastic at selling. And if you want to know why Bobby Lashley never made it further than he did, it's because the fucker can't sell.
That's the reason why Roman Reigns isn't Cena right now.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Well,
now
one of the many reasons.
Yeah, he's going heel, don't worry about it. You see, yeah. Heyman's tie, I'm telling you, coordinating that new t-shirt, people, you heard it here first. Just watching Sean do his thing and do this subtle heel stuff to get the match going, and Cena sells his ass off, and it's believable that this old guy's beating the young buck up and just out wrestling him. It's just a great match, and just the placement, he does the moonsault through the table really early to get and then the pile driver, goddamn,
on the stairs.
Great spots, great stuff. So I've really enjoyed that.
Well, this might surprise you a little bit, but I'm actually in agreement with you on the Money in the Bank ladder match. I'm not the biggest fan of it in the world. I don't hate it either, don't get me wrong. Probably suffers from a lack of Shelton Benjamin for me. The man, almost killed himself on an annual basis for that match.
Didn't he get on the card this year?
Well, yeah. It was for a push that amounted to about as much value as a Nick Gula's payoff. Someone somewhere will get that reference. Carly Kane, you mentioned, is short, but it's like blunt force trauma for the eyes. It's just that bad. To your point about the two world title matches, absolutely delivered. I think Sean and Cena falls into a category similar to Flair and Macho Man, in the sense that it's one of those that's a really good match that's almost, I think you may have referenced it yourself, almost forgotten about at times, and isn't sort of put up anywhere near that top category. And I think it's a really enjoyable, really fun match.
I was going to say quickly on that one, Carl, I think maybe the reason it's kind of forgotten is the build for it, because it was just thrown together from a Sean won a triple threat, so it was...
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was supposed to be Triple H and Cena again this year in a rematch from the year before, but Triple H tore his quad, so Sean was kind of shoehorned in, and they really didn't do a lot of build other than the kind of teaser that Sean's going to kick Cena in the build-up at some point, he's going to backstab him, and just when everyone forgot that that was the angle, Sean superkicked him on the last Raw and tore the house down.
No Triple H. Well, one can't grieve forever. the Taker Batista match, and I think this is one where I sort of worked myself up into a frenzy, even if no one else believed it. I went in genuinely thinking there was a chance, just because I thought, oh, it's Triple H's boy and they might actually do it, and oh god, they're going to give the streak to Batista of all people. Lo and behold, thankfully I was wrong, the streak goes on. And it was a match that exceeded all expectations. Having said that, I'd put it a bit lower than yourself, but still, a fun show overall.
Where did you slot it?
I put this at number 9.
Okay. Getting into your feedback here, Dylan Waco from Pro Wrestling Only says, this might sound strange, but I think 23 might be my number 1, and would be no worse than top 3 for me. Two legitimately great matches in Michael Cena and Taker Batista. Some solid and different stuff on the undercard with MVP Benoit, a good Money in the Bank match, and the ECW 8-man tag, and the pageantry of the Trump-McMahon feud playing out in a better-than-expected match. The show did massive business, and the atmosphere for it was great. In some ways, I think that show is the many they've tried to replicate every year since, with varying degrees of success. In terms of being a complete show, I think it is better than virtually every other Mania, barring perhaps 17 and 19, but those shows both ended in big downer moments, the Austin turn and the Brock botch on the finish. It's an interesting point there, in terms of making a case for 23 as being a little bit more... bit more elite than I have it. Moving along to number 6 on this list, WrestleMania 21 from 2005. This is a show, obviously one of my favourites, it's this high on the list, but there's so many things about this to like. The build up to this was fantastic. The Batista Triple H storyline that spanned about 5 months in total, they started the angle before Survivor Series to lead all the way up to this. It was the best build up for a match they've done in so long. I think Rock and Cena was the best one to come after this that we've already talked about, but in terms like an individual match setup, this was awesome. The domestic buy rate was through the roof for this show, so this was very, very successful. I love the Kurt Angle Shawn Michaels match on this show, one of my favourite matches in WrestleMania history. I know that match seems to have mixed opinions for reasons that I don't personally understand, but we'll get to that because I think there's some in the feedback. But I absolutely love that match. It was the first and possibly the best Money in the Bank match as well. A lot of talent in that match, Kane as well, and you got Randy Orton and Undertaker. You talked before about moments where you thought the streak might be up. This seemed like a very natural way to reheat up Randy Orton at the time, which ended up not being the case. But a good match, a very enjoyable match too, I thought. Obviously, you got the Hogan cameo, that was a lot of fun. You got the Austin Piper interaction, which was a lot of fun. The long-term implications of this show too, obviously this is all about propelling John Cena and Batista to the top of the company, which they did, and obviously going forward they were continuing their efforts. In terms of negatives that kind of hold this back, because the first half of this show is fantastic, maybe even a little bit further than the first half, maybe two-thirds of this show is fantastic. Eddie and Ray, I was a little bit disappointed by, to be quite honest. I remember thinking, going in, that's a match that, you read it on paper, Eddie and Ray, you have a certain expectation, fair or unfair, and this did kind of fall short of the mark. Obviously you got Akebono, which is kind of filler I barely know, and you don't have too much to talk about there. Cena and JBL just felt like a match off SmackDown. That was, I can't really say it was poor, but it was just nothing. It was a nothing match, and for a world title, I thought that was a huge disservice. Batista and Triple H was nothing special. Wouldn't call it a bad match, but again, considering the amazing build-up, it was what it was. It's pretty much everything you would expect it to be. Vengeance in Hell in a Cell was significantly, significantly better. Overall, for me, this is one of the most fun WrestleManias to watch. There's a lot of top-line entertainment. I think that, in terms of the right winners up and down the card, you had that too. If the top two matches deliver, I think this is a top three WrestleMania. The hype, the novelty of the WrestleMania goes Hollywood, and the vignettes they shot. A lot of really cool stuff here for WrestleMania 21. But Angle and Michaels, as the great match on this show, does hold this to a higher tier. And obviously, there's a lot of historical significance in terms of making Cena the man. So
I agree for the most part. I find it a really enjoyable show for large parts. The build is fantastic. The Batista Triple H build, you couldn't help but look at it at the time, at least from my perspective, and think this is the build that Randy Orton should have had.
Oh, for sure.
I loved Kurt Angle in the build with the match with Michaels.
Yeah, I didn't mention that, but
when he's doing his, I'm going to do everything you did in your career in 4 weeks, including having Sherry as manager for one episode of SmackDown and beating Marty Jannetty on SmackDown. And wasn't there a ladder match?
There's a ladder match with a jobber, I think.
Ladder match with a jobber in there that he wins, and it's all the comedic elements of Angle, if you like, that he just did so brilliantly throughout his run.
Sexy Kurt, we need to play this show out.
Oh, that's fantastic!
Make your ankle hurt.
Hands off the merchandise.
Eddie and Ray, I understand the disappointment, and I agree, but I also try and temper that with the fact of, I'm comparing it to, say, the Halloween Havoc match that they'd had years previously. So I can
understand. Ray just kept fucking with his mask the whole time.
He does.
Drove me nuts.
I can understand the disappointment with it, but I still enjoy it as a match. I love Money in the Bank because it's one of those where it's not entirely about spots to me. I don't know if this will get much sort of consensus around the table, but to me, it's one that has more of a story to it because they play up Benoit trying to overcome it with the arm. And Edge being the ultimate opportunist, which is the tag he'd carry for a while.
Yeah, Shelton trying to win through like the afterwards. Freak athletic spots for the first time.
Just to use 23 as a bit of a comparison here, this to me is one where the two world title matches that we mentioned don't deliver. I echo your thoughts on Cena JBL. I'm not a fan of the Batista Triple H match. The second half of the show in general, I think, it sort of falls by the wayside a bit. Akebono, Big Show, that sucks more than Tommy Rich in Jim Bonnet's office.
Allegedly, Carl. We can't prove that.
Allegedly.
You're reading the sleeves right again, haven't you?
On the whole, a really enjoyable match, and Angle, HBK, a brilliant build, and an absolutely fantastic match.
Yeah,
I texted him the other day. For me, Between the Ropes, Angles, and Michaels is the best match in Mania history.
Really?
I would rate that highly, yeah. Between the Ropes, I think we talked about Austin and Brett last time. All round the best match. I thought this is, again, this work of art, this match was. And just phenomenal. The simplicity... Who else could get over the ankle lock as a long a long drawn out finish like Sean did. Just, it's all about Sean. He's the mannerisms, the body language. It's just
the way he's with the crowd on the air. Yeah, he's got the crowd in the palm of his hands. He raises it in the air and drops it a little. It's just
Kurt,
awesome.
Kurt was allowed to be a badass, and he's fantastic. Two of my personal favourites. I love this match. Ray and Eddie. I'm like you, Carl. I think at the time I was a bit disappointed because of looking back at what they'd done previously, but watching the match with fresh eyes, it was a really good fun match. I really got a lot of time for it.
Strong as an opener for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I can just say, just sort of echo those points a little bit. Sorry, I don't mean to cut in there. Just also in the sense to me with Ray and Eddie, it's the fact that it's the first match of the program that probably doesn't help it in that sense as well.
Babyface match too.
Yeah, two babyface. So they're building to sort of the more meatier portion of the feud.
Taker and Orton was really fun. The ladder match, just Shelton Benjamin being the kind of the cameo star in the match was just fantastic. I was a big Shelty B fan at the time. that was all good stuff. So Naomi, for me, I'll echo again, the Cedar JBL title match absolutely felt like a SmackDown match, which, to be honest, during the phase of two world titles on WrestleMania, the first one always tends to feel like that. I mean, probably Taker Batista as the first one on the show we just talked about, probably a bit, that's different, but I mean the first of two title matches always seems it's going to feel less important because natural placing. Triple H Batista as a match, what we saw was Batista can't sell like John Cena, but the crowd was hot for the end, and it probably, until that Taker Batista match, you probably wouldn't expect any more from Batista. So with that in mind, maybe disappointing. But no, for me, super show, top five show for me.
Okay, well, I'm not alone in my sentiments here.
Money in the Bank, I remember being really excited by it at the time, the concept of it. You're absolutely right. I absolutely 100% bought into the Benoit sell at the time. I remember just thinking genuinely, like, shit, is he just fucked his arm, because he wasn't using it at all when he was climbing the ladder, and it just, I completely bought into it until read the reports the day after. So props to him. Didn't quite agree with the winner of the match. I thought it should have been Christian. I thought Christian had a lot more momentum going in than Edge. It seemed to be a lot more over. So slightly disappointed with Edge, even though he ended up proving me wrong. Orton Undertaker, I was 100% certain on Orton was going to win this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, just from like the whole Legend Killer gimmick, obviously, but also I thought, and we've argued this before, me and Carl, about the fact I thought he needed reheating after the burial by Triple H, and I thought this would have been a good way of going about it, whether it was right or wrong or not. So I remember being hugely disappointed of the result at the time, though the match I thought was very entertaining. There's a couple of nice little kind of segments as well, which I was kind of watching before we actually started the show. The Hassan with Hogan return, which got a huge pop at the time. Austin Piper, which has some has some hilarious moments as well. Austin's just great, and Piper's not too far behind.
What's the Austin line? I can't remember. Piper says something and slaps him, and Austin goes,
"Thanks very much for having me, little son of a bitch."
Yeah,
I kind of like you.
God bless Steve Austin.
Yeah. And I absolutely agree with Carl. Like, it seems like the show just fucking plummets. I mean, obviously with Akebono, Big Show, which is just dross anyway. Cena JBL. At the time I was a Cena fan, but. But I mean, I didn't go into that with that match with high expectations because I hate JBL, and I think he's
terrible champion.
Yeah, and I think he freaking sucked anyway. So I just was waiting for that match to finish. Triple H Batista I was looking forward to due to the build, but ended up just kind of similar to other matches I've described before. It just felt like watching paint dry. And so it's almost, whilst I'd have this considerably higher, this almost has an element of WrestleMania 8 to it, where it's just like, riding high early on and then just, the fall afterwards.
I can see that, but I certainly don't think it's anywhere near as pronounced as number 8.
Oh, absolutely. I got this kind of round up that top 10 mark, while 8 is like down in like 14th or 15th, I think. 15th for me. Everything was built up really well, but the one thing that really kind of sells this to me was the advertising campaign for it. Whether you have like the Braveheart or the freaking Pulp Fiction or Kurt Angle in the funniest fucking wig. The best one, which was for me, the Basic Instincts with the three Chris's, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho and Christian, and Stacey Keebler, which is so many funny moments. It's never been topped, and I don't think it ever will get anywhere. No one will ever get close to the imagination of that advertising campaign, unless you just blatantly rip it off again.
See, Yeah, I mean, yeah, watching it back now for nostalgia, it was wildly entertaining, but I still think you shouldn't have fucking JBL and Cena fighting each other in your title match, and they're doing this wacky...
A Few Good Men.
Yeah, just so torn. I mean, yeah, one hand entertaining, the other hand... No, not for me. Yeah.
Just to hear what you have to say, Benjamin kicks some pro wrestling going, and says, I probably rate this one higher than most, but I think it's a great show. Ray Eddy is a good opener. The first Money in the Bank is probably my favourite Mania spot fest. Taker Orton is great and an underrated streak match. I like HBK and Angle, and despite my more smarky qualities as a wrestling fan, I'm a big Batista mark, so seeing him go over Triple H and ending the show celebrating with a belt is great. Big Vic from TPWW forums says, I didn't like this Mania because for the longest time I knew Batista would win. There is no problem with that in and of itself, but I think that he was not the person Triple H should put over, since Batista's mic skills were so awful at the time. I dreaded hearing Batista promos each Monday night following WrestleMania. And Dylan Waco from Pro Wrestling Only chimes in and says, 21 is a tough one, because of a lot of it hinges on how highly you view Angle versus Shawn. I have no use for the match at all. I don't hate it, but I don't think it's particularly good either, so I don't think much of the show. I will grant that it has some significance in the sense it was the first time that Taker's streak felt like a big deal, and the first Money in the Bank match was on the show, but as a top-to-bottom card, I just can't see it as a top 10 Mania. Not a bad show necessarily, but there are shows in the previous tier, particularly Mania 7, which I think are easily better, which is a point that I obviously I disagree because it was my list. Yeah. But in terms of like, yeah, the amount of average or painful on 7 compared to the amount of average or painful on this, I can't see that comparison myself.
Yeah, there's 15 matches on 7, yeah. And it very much screams to me a just
14 actually, I double checked.
Sorry, my apologies, 14, but you know, just a bloated show.
Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum, who I want to get to because he's actually been awesome on the board in terms of reviewing these podcasts and giving his thoughts, says that this is a tale of two halves for me. The matches that shaped the company's direction and future, and the matches that delivered in the ring. Even though the results were predictable, the decisions to position Big Dave and John Cena as the top guys on their respective shows were timely and sensible, given that the company had really struggled to establish consistently pushed babyface main eventers since Austin and Rock had left the full-time roster. That Batista's ascension came after, for me, a pretty dull match, which involved him having to wrestle a Triple H match instead of his match, was a shame, but not a shock. He goes on to say, the real value in Mania 21 is two other matches. Your description of the sensational Michaels vs. Angle, one of my favourite matches in company history, is pretty much on the mark. At the time, I was writing an essay about the joy of pro wrestling storytelling, and not only was this one of five matches I elected to dissect, I believe it may have been the match that prompted me to start the project It's That Good. He also says that, thankfully, that match has company in the form of Undertaker vs. Orton. I strongly believe that had Randy not needed time off with his shoulder injury, that they would have booked him to win this match to make him look massively strong for a summer program against Batista for the big gold belt. On the night, I didn't know Randy needed the surgery, and when he got off the RKO, everyone in the room thought he was about to win. For me and my friends, that match was really exciting. For Mania 21, overall, you've got a good combination of historical significance and two stunning matches which probably make it top 5 material for me. We are now truly in the upper echelons of WrestleMania history, as we are now broaching the top 5, and at number 5... it's time to talk about WrestleMania 19 from 2003. This was just a really, really fun show. There's so many matches on this show that are just wildly entertaining. Austin and Rock is obviously very, very memorable. I think the weakest of the three WrestleMania matches they had, but that doesn't stop it from being a very entertaining match. Angle and Lesnar was a really great effort, considering especially the state that Angle was in going in. Really, really good match. Jericho and Shawn is excellent and pretty much the consensus show stealer. But Hogan and Vince was a minor miracle. It's a ridiculously fun match. The sight of Vince McMahon, you know, covered in blood, doing the "Here's Johnny" face from the apron was just absolutely great. So, I mean, again, there's a lot of good here. There's a lot of sustained good. A lot of really, you know, the great matches on the show really were given a lot of time to be great. And a lot of the filler on the show is kind of, you know, short, harmless, passable, get it out the way. Build to this was pretty slapdash and misdirected, in my opinion. And it kind of echoed in the buy rate too, which was really low for this WrestleMania. But the focus on Hogan and Vince as the prime thing to build this up. They were stop-start on the build for Angle and Lesnar because they didn't know they didn't even know if Angle was going to wrestle that match. The Triple H Booker T build as well, which really is pronounced, very pronounced as a bad build considering the finish they went with in the end. Rey Mysterio only gets 5 minutes again, so he kind of gets jobbed out here. Overall, the filler goes by really, really quick. Nothing really stinks on the show at all. The key stuff is all excellent, and is as close to a prolonged period of sustained quality as we'll get for any WrestleMania possibly barring what I have as number one. So I'm keen to think what you have here, because there's a lot of people who have, again, very different opinions on this show. So what do you guys think?
Definitely makes my top five. When I was going through my own sort of list for this, I labelled this as probably the best WrestleMania that nobody's ever seen in the context of the buy rate that you referenced there. I agree with you on the premise that Hogan and Vince was the main focus, and it really shouldn't have been in the year 2003. That being said, the build for that match, I did enjoy.
Yeah,
I did enjoy.
They did a very good job
the 20 years in the making, and getting the likes of Bob Costas and other notables to give their reflections on Vince and Hogan,
Piper,
from the cultural perspective of it. And the bit where Vince is stabbing him with the pen and signs the contract in his blood, I thought that was fantastic. But I agree completely, to make that the main focus of the show, I think, is the reason why it does the low buy rate it does. But Jericho HBK, fantastic. Sean showing that he's continuing on his sort of good run of form, if you like, coming in off the 2002 match with Triple H and his great return from his back injury. Lesnar, Angle, I really enjoy, apart from the terrifying spot that you referenced.
Yeah.
Triple H, Booker T, for the fact they go through sort of the racial overtones in the build-up, and the ending is possibly the most deplorable act Triple H has ever committed.
I don't know. That covers possibly. Some ground.
It does cover some ground. Okay, it may be second to Katie Vick, but it's certainly up there as far as his negatives are. Most of the other stuff that's either filler or decent. The one really poor match, I would say, though, I've got to reference it, is Undertaker against A-Train and Big Show.
Oh yeah.
I don't think there is an Undertaker match at Mania I've cared about less since the King Kong Bundy one at number 11.
No.
But on the whole, a really good show, really enjoyable, and makes my top five.
Yeah, top three for me.
At number three?
I don't do lists, Liam.
Of course.
That means I can throw out arbitrary comments like, this is top five, when I've actually got 12 top fives. Yeah, Austin Rock 3 in isolation, great. It's a really fun match. It's slightly sour because it's not the same. The steam's not in Austin. Obviously, we know what happened with Austin coming out of that show as well with his health. But I think it was... So I think he was, you know, it was maybe 60% Austin. But Rock, I think, went above and beyond. It was really his match. It was his story to beat Steve Austin. So for that, I mean, the promo he cuts on the show is just fantastic.
The Act 3 promo?
Yeah, brilliant promo. For me, that was, it made it a lot more valuable than just standalone what it would have been, being their third go around when you kind of knew Rock was winning anyway. Jericho Michaels, just phenomenal. The end scene when he low blows him and he slides down him, just fantastic. Again, body language and mannerisms from Michaels. Bear those two words in mind, because we're going to come back to those two words. Super show. The Triple H Booker T thing, it wasn't even the build which was diabolical. The commentary throughout the match, when King just doesn't stop talking about Booker being a criminal and stuff, it's just absolutely, it sucks the life out of the match. If the finish wasn't going to do it anyway. Good show. Nathan Jones is on it as well.
he was Undertaker's would-be tag team partner, but gets canned right on the pre-game, I think, right? Or earlier in the show?
On Sunday Night Heat, you see him laid out in the back. You don't even see him get beaten up, you just see him on the floor.
Just lie down, Nathan.
If I can just go back to an earlier point that Liam made, because I just want to ask a question on this, because I want to make sure that I'm not wrong in my thought process. The Angle Lesnar build, wasn't that hamstrung by the fact that they wanted to do a similar build to Rock Lesnar from SummerSlam? They wanted to do the training montage, and they weren't able to do it because of Angle's injuries beforehand. Am I right with that?
No, well, it's they should have done that build, and I was always expecting that build to happen. The reason it didn't is because, again, they didn't know if Angle was going to make the show, because he suffered the injury at No Way Out, the neck injury. And the deal was that they thought that Angle wasn't going to make it to Mania, so they did that. They built the program
to end on SmackDown, if you remember. They actually advertised the Lesnar-Angle match to happen on SmackDown because they knew, okay, we've got to get the belt off Angle before Mania because you need the surgery. And then Angle at the 11th hour just decided, fuck it, I'm doing Mania. And that's when they did that angle, if you remember, where they had Eric Angle in the hood kneeling down in the corner and Lesnar kills him but realizes it's not Kurt. And that was like a big thing at the time where everyone was expecting on the SmackDown tapings, Lesnar's going to win the belt just because he is. And then obviously Angle runs away with the belt. It deflated the angle. It made it kind of just seem like any other feud.
It wasn't what it could have been, what you hoped it would be.
Exactly.
On the match itself, Angle, considering his injury, is absolutely unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing negative, the blown shooting star probably stopped it being a 5-star match. I don't like seeing Lesnar, especially at that. I think now they might have found a formula for him and are comfortable with, but force him to work like a regular babyface big guy kind of thing,
selling with the ribs.
Yeah, I mean, with Kurt, it wasn't. It's much easier because Kurt's a badass himself, and it, there's a story that you can tell. But I think just in general, the Lesnar positioned as the face, it wasn't his strong point. He's a heel, especially at that time when he's still kind of finding his way. But
a friend of mine, Glenn Stewart, went to this WrestleMania, and he told me that if you watch that match, the crowd's pretty quiet for the main event for a good chunk of it. And I remember him saying that, you know, the word going around the building, you could just hear it from all sides, was that, you know, we're kind of watching this with bated breath because obviously Angle's hurt and everybody knows it, and you're kind of hoping that he's not going to do anything. And we were doing the same thing when watching it live, like, Jesus Christ, Kurt, don't fucking hurt yourself, don't land on your head here.
I mean, you wouldn't know if you like watched. You wouldn't know. And you know the spots he does are still fantastic. When he does like the belly to belly, or he does a 360 on Lesnar. It's like just great stuff. But you wouldn't know he was hurt if you didn't know in advance.
Yeah, like Kieran, I've got this in my top three, and actually placed that number three. As you said, the thing that really kind of builds 19 up is the key matches at the end. And when you were talking about the build, it was a bit kind of lopsided, but I kind of also include the Royal Rumble within the build of Mania. And as I stated on the previous podcast, that Rumble is rated highly in personal Rumble favourites, you know, due to the build that they did with Jericho and Shawn Michaels, or Christian coming out disguised as Jericho, and then Jericho attacking him from behind, beating Shawn Michaels within an inch of his life, and then eliminating him, which just shocked and just almost like just not really killed the crowd, but just shocked everyone at the time because they thought like, oh, Shawn might do his little like 19-5 thing again where he wins from number one. He's out in 2 minutes, which is brilliant. Shawn Michaels comes back all bloody with the tape on and eliminates Jericho. Definitely, obviously, the right guy to win that. Didn't think Jericho looked weak at all losing.
You think so? Okay, this is an interesting thing. Not to cut you off here, but I remember at the time there was a lot of backlash about the fact that Jericho didn't win the match.
I remember something like that at the time. But in fairness, in retrospect at least, anyway, benefited Jericho more losing and then doing what he did afterwards by kneeing Shawn in the balls. I just thought was like, cunt, you know, it's just a thing like that. And really, fairness, that's the reaction I think Jericho would want more, rather than just like, oh, you beat Shawn. So I can't. I don't know. just general generic.
Popeye's joined the round table.
That was a really entertaining match. I absolutely agree with. Yeah, no way should the build have been built around McMahon Hogan. But saying that at the time. It was an entertaining match for what it was, and Vince being in super camp mode. I kind of was probably more into this than the Vince Shane at 17, just because at no real point did I believe, like, I know we're all supposed to believe in the stories, at no point did I believe those two actually hated each other, father and son. Whilst Hogan Vince, you can kind of think that maybe, you know, he's kind of getting him like, yeah, well, fucking court case.
The piece of shit did testify against him in the trial.
Exactly.
Of
Vince's life. They put that up, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why I was a little bit more kind of believing into it than, I'd say, the 17 match with his son. The main event, the match is great, and you're right, if he hadn't botched it, I think that would have been known as one of the greatest main events of all time, because it was a solid match. Brock Lesnar's so much better as being the badass heel. It's just that's the way he should be booked.
I just never want to see Lesnar sell.
until the
second he's absolutely right. So.
And this isn't a thing, I don't think Lesnar can sell. It's just the fact I don't want to see him sell, because he's just so convincing as being like, you know, you can butt fuck anyone pretty much, because he's just so goddamn like just huge. He's voided the fuck, you know. It's just,
we'll be Brock remiss Lesnar. Not to mention Roddy Piper
and the villain.
Yeah, goddamn, that was great. Watching him back, he's like, fuck yeah, he's finally remembered. He's coming back for you, Hogan, bastard.
Roddy Piper with child.
Yeah.
We also forgot to mention Hogan hitting Hugo, dumb son of a bitch, with a chair.
The Austin Rock. But Rock's fantastic, you know, like at that time when he's putting like people's gear on, you know, like the Hogan bandana or Hurricane's cape, and he puts on the leather waistcoat, and King, who no matter what has always been a Rock fan, is just going, is just crying, basically, take the waistcoat off, Rock, it's all gone to shit ever since you put it on. And Rock's just like still like getting up all grog, and he's still like selling like he's got the waistcoat on. Rock's just fucking amazing. Yeah, right, amazing. Right, this time period, this 2003 time period, when he came back to Hollywood Rock, is my favourite period of Rock ever, because when he just came back, this guy was the one man entertainment machine. He was just, because he was just let loose. He was just like, do whatever you want. And he was just so imaginative at the time with the Rock concert and everything. And you just like, this is why, like, I fucking love this guy. It's just like, he's the best fucking thing going, outperforming everybody, and just like, just,
you know what's funny about
he was
it,
just
though?
He was just fucking God at that particular, like, that 2-3 month period. He was fucking outstanding.
And every pay-per-view that he was on did bad. As Hollywood Rock.
Yeah.
This period of time, every pay-per-view, the No Way Out before with Hogan, this Mania, the Backlash with Goldberg, were all massive disappointments. Moving on to what you think, because again, very polarizing opinions on this show from the feedback. Grimace from Pro Wrestling Only. 19 is completely overrated in my view. Brock Angle is a good match, but not great. Michaels Jericho is in the same boat. I like Austin Rock and McMahon Hogan a lot, but the rest was alright, I guess. Off the top of my head, I would take 17, 23, 7, and 30 over it easily, and maybe some other. Noel Dynasty from WrestlingForum.com goes the other way. 19 is underrated as hell. 5 main events with an undercard that included a good Divas triple threat and a good tag team triple threat as well. Probably my favourite Mania to rewatch. Dr. Peter Venkman from the UK Fan Forum is back in. 19 is far from shit, but I think it suffers from the two world title matches not being much cop. But Jericho, Michaels, Rock, Austin, Hogan, Vince are all classic matches, and Mysterio Hardy was a decent enough opener. In fairness to the WWE title match, if Brock had hit the shooting star press, it would have been an incredible end to the night, rather than everyone going, fucking hell, and rubbing the back of the necks. Mifune Jackson from Wrestling Forum says, I'm fine with where WrestleMania 19 is at in your list. I think the two title matches bring that show down. Triple H Booker was just not the sort of thing I enjoy watching, and Angle Lesnar felt like the two roles should have been reversed. No matter how many times you take Brock's ribs, I'll never buy him as an underdog challenger to Kurt Angle. Their SummerSlam match was everything this one should have been. WWE as a whole was on a downward trend too at this point, and it was a bit of a downer for me from the previous two WrestleManias. The matches were great, but there was just a dark cloud surrounding everything. He's got a point there though, because I remember they did like a tease with Angle Lesnar on SmackDown the previous year, like some kind of face-to-face backstage back when Paul Heyman was booking. And I just remember thinking at the time, they should do this at WrestleMania. Angle is the babyface, who, you know, he's the big heel of the time, but Lesnar is the unstoppable monster, and Angle, the only, you know, legit wrestler on his level, is the, and that's when they could have done the Rock scene, the Rock Lesnar build again. I thought that would have been the way to go. Big Bad Mick from Pro Wrestling Only says, this is in my top two. For me, it's the uninterrupted run of 5, or you could count the tag team triple threat and say 6. Good to great matches, with none of them suffering from time constraints that really make this baby sore. And Bad News Gertner from TPWW Forum says, looking back at it, WrestleMania 19 is hands down the best WrestleMania of all time. So very strong feelings on this all across the board.
Yeah, just to that point as well, I think even the match when it's Kurt and Kurt and Lesnar, and JR says, you know, he talks about how Kurt won the NCAA heavyweight title as a 195-pounder going up against 270-pounder as well. He said, that's the story right there. That's the most simple, beautiful story you could tell. And yeah,
this is the guy that beat bigger guys his entire life as a legitimate wrestler.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I'm not sure if the fact that they were both former NCAA champions is mentioned at any point in the build before you get to Mania.
I can't even think off the top of my head.
Exactly. And the fact that we're looking sort of blankly at each other and trying to recall it highlights that that's really not a good thing.
Yeah. The reason why I like hold 19 up there so much as well is not necessarily from the Raw side, but this is like the Mania that's it from the SmackDown side that was right in the middle of that golden period of like the 2 years that Brock was on SmackDown, which I love that era of SmackDown.
SmackDown
and this and this
great
is
for about a year
yeah,
and, a half.
And this was the Mania that was like slap bang in the middle of it, and so just because of that, Raw not so good, but because of that, I love this Mania.
Can agree with you more on that.
Yeah.
Move along now to number 4 on this list, WrestleMania 14 from 1998, a show that I feel I almost have to justify its place this high on the list, considering the amount of not necessarily criticism, but debate and conjecture that we've got in the feedback about this being placed too high. So I'm going to do a real yeoman's effort here to try and explain why I put this so high. Obviously, I've mentioned before the different metrics I use to kind of grade these shows. I thought the build and the significance of this show is absolutely through the roof. The Austin Tyson stuff speaks for itself. It's been talked about countless times in the past. But this is a show, to me, this is a really great example of a place in time show. There's a magic that from watching this show, when I watched it the first time, and when I watch it back, it you know, maybe it's nostalgia, but it takes me right back to the time. the hype for the top matches on the show was awesome. Obviously, not just the Austin Tyson stuff, but the stuff like, you know, Tyson joining DX on Raw when Sean rips the shirt off. Every week on Raw, Austin's trying to get to Sean, but Sean always seems to outwork and somehow get that super kick in, and Austin just can't wait to get his hands on Sean. It's great stuff. The promotion for Tyson was awesome. The hype for Taker and Kane was excellent, and the best booking of a monster introduction that the WWE's ever done. So in terms of actually the anticipation for this show, it was huge. Everything on the show itself to me is really, really fun. You got the Rock promo with Jennifer Flowers. You got Shamrock snapping in his match. You got the LOD return. The dumpster match is really fun. You got Pete Rose getting tombstoned. It's a star-making show for Steve Austin, for The Rock, who comes off great in the match with Shamrock, where he just gets his ass whipped and gets blitzed on the show, but then retains the belt and is being wheeled off on the stretcher, and everybody's doing the same thing around the table, raising their arm, emulating when Rock, beaten and battered, holds the belt in the air like he actually just did something. Shamrock comes back over and beats his ass some more.
We just raised our arms like we were in the Nation or something.
Yeah! It was amazing. It was just fantastic for The Rock. And also, start making for Sable, because while people will not like this match, and no one talks about it in terms of WrestleMania history, the crowd is fucking molten for this match. And it's not all just because of Sable, because there's a near fall in there where I think Miro rolls up Goldust off the top of my head, and the crowd just pisses their pants thinking that the artist formerly known as Goldust has just done a job, which is just surreal to me in 1998. But the crowd was rabid for Sable. The crowd is so hot for this. In terms of cons on this show, let's be honest, there's no classic matches on this show. Taker and Kane for the great build, it was very disappointing, and while Austin and Michaels started off very, very hot, it cooled off in the middle, and even though you got what you wanted at the end, in terms of the Tyson knockout, the Austin victory, the crowd goes crazy, so how much does it really matter? It is hard to rank, because to me, if you're judging it by the metrics of as a standalone show, does it hold up by the standards that we've got today? The answer is no, quite honestly. It doesn't have that great main event match. The thing that was built up the most doesn't deliver in the same way we expect things to deliver now. Whether it's just time and place, the fact that you could feel the momentum, this show is just magic to me. You can watch this show, and to me it's just, you can feel the WWF is on the cusp. So this is the show that led to the WWF taking over WCW again, going back to ratings form, and it was just all you needed for Steve Austin from here.
Yeah, it's very much it's the show that turns the tide for the company in the war. And I, like you say, we around this table and other people have talked about the Austin Tyson stuff to death, but so you don't need to go into too much detail about it, but the mainstream publicity they get from it is absolutely fantastic for the company.
Yeah, and again, not trying to bogart your time here as well, but I remember it being on the back page of the Mirror and the Sun the next day. I remember it being on BBC News when it happened.
It was all over the show, because even in somewhere like over here where wrestling wouldn't have had the sort of as big a cultural impact with Tyson, it was still that boxing tie-in, which we were all familiar with because he broke my heart because he knocked out Frank Bruno twice. Damn you, Iron Mike. But there isn't anything on the show that's a blowaway classic. But it's a fun show. It's probably the one last good moment that the LOD have with the company. The crowd, like I say, is rabid throughout the show. You mentioned the Sable match. The selling that Goldust does for Sable is nothing short of heroic from the man. But it's a really fun show, despite there not being any sort of blowaway matches. And I've always given HBK a pass for the main event when you consider the state that his back was in at the time, and the fact that he's visibly wincing throughout. You know, Kieran's shedding tears right now, sat next to me.
No, I'm not, Carl. Well, Carl, contrary to your perception there, I do not have a lot of love for Shawn Michaels in this match. Because, quite frankly, the Shawn Michaels 4-year back injury is the biggest work in professional wrestling history that's still believed to this day. I just do not buy it. It was half as bad as they ever let on. He comes out of this match and he's an absolute fucking rubber ball bouncing all over the shop for Austin when he's selling to make himself look good. And then what does he do when he's on offense? He fucking slows it down and he works for sympathy, and he's trying to babyface himself in the match, and I have no doubt about that. At one point he turns over to the commentator and shouts, "Who's the baddest son of a bitch in the WWF now?" And he goes, "Hope you appreciate this," he shouts at him. I love Shawn Michaels, I'd have to say that again, but I have no doubt he was trying to fuck Austin during the course of this match.
Austin, just as a sidebar here, Austin on the commentary. Cause I think this match is on Steve Austin's DVD. I can't remember which one it is, but it's the 4-disc one. And he does commentary over this match. And when they do the scene at the end where Tyson puts the shirt on him and he just gives Sean the finger, Austin just like, there's a little something more to that than that reads, because I kind of implying that he kind of saw what Sean was trying to do.
Would that have also anything to do with the fact that Undertaker was sat backstage with his fist taped up just in case?
Well, I think that's the truth that the lie is wrapped in. No doubt there was some kind of injury there, but he was thinking,
And that bump upside down in the corner did look fucking horrible.
It did look horrible, but he still moved around at points when he needed to later after that as well. As I said before, Shawn Michaels, the reason I love him, he's all mannerisms and body language, and he does it better than anyone else ever. That's how he tells his stories. That's why he can get so much out of so little with his opponents. And when I see him selling the back the way he's selling his back, he's working or he's exaggerating what's there. I have no doubt about that, and it took massively away from this match. As a show overall, as a build, nothing in our lifetime has been hotter. Probably nothing ever will. Mainstream publicity, it goes without saying. Everything, yeah, was fun and pretty
monster buy rate.
It did, it turned around, but I cannot say I wasn't disappointed with the show. The last two matches, Taker and Kane, it's fucking atrocious. Why the fuck Kane the heel tombstones Pete Rose before the match?
Oh no, after Rose's awesome promo, yeah. Why would you do that?
So I just don't understand that. And that match, it's turgid anyway.
It's Kane.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it did the job as a show, no doubt about it. So I can say it's got to be their top 10, but I'd have it near the lower end of that scale, to be honest with you.
Okay.
And Sean, I'm on to you, sunshine.
I'm kind of like the opposite way, I guess, from the general opinion. I've actually got this right up there. It's my number one.
Seems a little high to me, but go ahead.
Well, I'll explain why. The one obviously kind of obvious flaw of the show, and there's nothing I can really defend it on, which is the fact that there isn't that one standout match. But for me personally, I thought the overall show was the highlight. I watched it again more recently because it's been like maybe about a year since I last saw it. The light heavyweight championship match I think is really good as well, considering the short amount of time it's got. I kind of remember it being like a solid match. When I watched it again recently, that's actually for the time that they were given, it's actually a really good match, and they get a lot of action in there. And Triple H, Owen Hart, an absolutely solid European title match. I enjoyed the antics of China and Sergeant Slaughter at ringside. I mean, I just thought it was fucking hilarious, to be honest. As the manager, kicking the shit out of someone like Sergeant Slaughter, I thought it was great. It really individualized her, made her stand out. It was a great kind of gimmick to have for her personally, and also for Triple H. You said about the mixed tag match, which put Sable over. Mark Mero, pretty underappreciated mid-card heel. He's just an absolute superb douchebag. Solid dumpster match, which, the New Age Outlaws didn't look weak in. Austin Shawn, whilst it's not as great as it potentially could be, I don't think it's a bad match by any standard. I think it was, I think it was a solid encounter. Not necessarily of the quality that you would want of a main event, but still solid. Undertaker Kane, if I can try and defend this in any way, is I think this match...
So save us a lot of time and effort and just don't.
The perfect person at the perfect time. I don't think it would have worked the year before. Probably would have worked the year later. But 98 was absolutely the year to bring Tyson in. Absolute right character. They got the most out of him. Tyson is a wrestling fan. He loves wrestling, and you can see he's enjoying every fucking moment of it.
I could say, yeah, it was almost... It was beautiful because it was Mike Tyson. You cannot underestimate what a huge star Tyson still was at the time. Yeah. And to your point, Carl, he's always been a massive draw in this country still. I think that's why he was doing his little live tours over here until he got banned or whatever. I think, though, it worked despite him, because half this time I don't think Tyson's got a fucking clue what's going on.
He's not the sharpest.
Well, he's just like a ball of energy, isn't he? Throughout it's sort of very much unfocused at times when he's there, but I don't think it detracts too much.
I don't think it can be overestimated how critical this Mania was to the history of WrestleMania. There is no other show, there's no other WrestleMania that did what this one did, which is a complete overhaul of not just the product we were watching, but just of the overall company as well. I mean, every other Mania you'll get, you would just be like, we're putting the belt on this guy or these guys, we're pushing these two people now, but we still got all this. This is the show where they're turning around and saying, sorry about 11, 12 and 13 folks, they're gone, this is who it is. Hence why all the results are. Austin goes over, Ken Shamrock goes over, Rock retains the belt, Sable gets put over, Triple H, everybody that needed to win won.
Perfectly booked WrestleMania too.
Absolutely.
I think the best way to summarise it in my mind is that it's the genuine launching pad of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And for that reason, to Liam's defence, not that he necessarily needs it, but that was why it also would make my top five.
The arena, even the basic design, where it looks almost quite kind of gritty and kind of grimy or whatever, I don't know, I just kind of like that kind of, it felt like very kind of underground and new and stuff like that. It's just, I love this show absolutely. I know it's not absolutely perfect, but to me, I just fucking love it, and it always brings a smile, and it's number one.
I will say the America the Beautiful by the DX Man is one of the worst things in the history of WrestleMania.
I've just got to, one thing about Sean. I've buried him. I feel guilty. I feel like he's not going to return my calls anymore. But when he walks out and he looks pilled up and he punches the air and he goes, who's the fucking man?
Yeah,
coolest guy in fucking history.
You can see it in his eyes. Dude.
Oh, yeah.
He's far gone.
Maybe that's it. Maybe just the pills wear off halfway through the match. Maybe that's what it was.
King Lobos from Wrestling Forum says 14 is really fucking high. Wow, I seem to remember it being a one match show with Kane versus Taker. What other stuff makes it?
What? No,
I seem to remember it being a one match. I can't.
No.
Taker and Kane was the highlight of Kane. I'll give you that. New Brandon from F4W says, all things considered, not bad a list, but I will have to somewhat agree with the posters on this board that you've overrated 14. I wouldn't put it at the bottom, but it's not top 10 for me. Otani's Jacket from Pro Wrestling Only says that WrestleMania 14 was a critical and commercial success at the time it aired. The matches may not hold up in retrospect, but it was an important turning point for the company. I wonder if its impact has diminished over time. I think that's actually quite a good point there. Triple G from WrestlingForum.com says, probably the best constructed Mania ever in terms of booking. Storylines were paid off. There were big moments. The atmosphere was intense and the characters came out stronger than they were going in. Probably the only thing holding this Mania back is the lack of a big venue like 3, 6, 17 and the like, but I would argue that the creative and commercial success of this event led to them eventually being able to hold Mania in stadiums again. Attitude Era fan from Wrestling Forum says, looking back, WrestleMania 14 feels like just another WrestleMania. Back then it truly felt like a special event since the previous years felt very ordinary. WrestleMania 14 started the modern WrestleMania and the road to WrestleMania had more importance after 14. And Corn Dad from TPWW forums says 14 and 23 should be lower, 19 should be higher, and so should 30, but I agree with the rest. Moving on to the top 3 now, we're talking about the very, very best WrestleManias of all time, in my opinion, and the first candidate in the top 3 is WrestleMania 10 from 1994. Obviously, when it comes to shows of this caliber, the strengths are very, very well documented, so I'm not going to harp on them too much, but if you believe that this show has 2 5-star matches on, I would not disagree with you one bit. That would be enough for a classic show, in my opinion. Bret and Owen is fantastic. Shawn and Razor is amazing. I absolutely love that match. But it's not just the two great matches, but the narrative of the show as well is so good. The fact that Bret Hart gets beaten by Owen Hart, which nobody saw coming, was the perfect end to an excellent match. And then at the very end of the show, wins the world championship. Thank you very much, Lex Luger. See you in the opener next year. The wrongdoing of WrestleMania 9, which I hated so much, and put in last place, is corrected here. Bret Hart is made the man, but then Owen Hart, as everybody's praising Bret and they've got him on the shoulders, you've got Owen Hart standing in the aisle saying, "What about me?" The guy that said he was better than Bret the entire time and actually proved it on the biggest stage, and he's still left with his dick in his hand as Bret gets the plaudits. It's a great narrative for the show. The ladder match I probably undersold by talking about it in passing there. It revolutionized the way that I certainly looked at wrestling, and I'm sure it did the same for many others. And there's nothing bad on this show as far as I'm concerned. I think the closest thing to bad on this show is Luger Yokozuna, which feels like it goes in age, but the fact that Mr. Perfect's out there and makes the right decision kind of sums it up for me.
You just don't appreciate the nerve hold.
No, I don't appreciate it, but that's my story and I'm sticking to it, Carl. I think Savage and Crush is fun in the middle. Yeah, like I said, everything else is what it is. It's average. We got so much great stuff at that caliber.
on this show both at the same time, you're usually lucky if you get one match that good on a WrestleMania. Here we get two. They're both incredible, but they both hold up today as far as I'm concerned. I understand the argument about TLC matches and the fact that ladder matches now become can you top this fest and how creative can we be. In terms of a pure ladder match, this is still my favourite. The heat through the roof for both of these matches. I can't praise them enough. As an overall show, I absolutely love it, and that's why it's number three for me.
I would probably go number two for me. Opened up my eyes to the greatness that is Shawn Michaels. Completely changed
and his pants
and his, yeah,
and his ass, which is hanging out.
Great moon spot, shaved and everything. well, I bet Razor's wasn't. great show. Completely changed my love of wrestling. So I don't want to bang on too much. I don't need to. I've said it all before. Fantastic show. Fantastic narrative throughout the show. Great stuff with Owen, obviously, at the end, as you say, that's fantastic. And yeah, you're damn right, Mr. Perfect was right not to count, because there was people in the ring.
There were people in the ring. Fun cameo from Pipe, which you didn't mention, and the other thing that I didn't mention that I do want to talk about is how good the focus on tradition was and the hype for this. This was the first time in WrestleMania history where they really played up the tradition and the heritage of the show itself, 10 years in the making, back in Madison Square Garden. It felt big going in, certainly bigger than the two that would surround this show.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have very much a consensus around the table here. I think I have it as number three on my list as well. Two classic matches. Like you say, we don't need to go into too much detail about the ladder match. Everybody knows how great it is. It's the trailblazer, if you will, for what follows and the sort of individuals it would inspire in later years, such as the Hardys, you know, etc., etc. And again, the storytelling throughout the night is just impeccable. Absolutely top-notch. And I think it's well worth its place in your top three.
Lawler's great on commentary too. Is that just a throwaway thing that I just thought of off the top of my head? Lawler, who'd been gone for months, comes back here. He is Superman! He is!
I myself don't have this in my top 10. The key reason why is, and I'll ask a question probably knowing the answer already, did you guys all watch it as it happened when you were kids?
Yep. The next day on tape.
Yep.
I didn't. So I stopped watching in 93, so I wasn't like influential young kid watching this at the time. I didn't get to watch the two key matches till 2000. You put 28 in your top 10 because there's something that's added to it which I can't comment on that puts it in your top 10, but for me doesn't, because I didn't experience it the way you did. And this is also up there because I didn't experience it the same way you did. Shawn Razor wasn't the first ladder match I ever saw. It was Triple H to Rock. I can't agree with you guys just from the fact of I didn't experience it the same way you guys did, so I can't put it in my top 10, because as of that card to me is a two-match card. It's an excellent two-match card. I can't disagree with you in any way, shape or form that those two are five-star matches. It's a revolutionary ladder match, and as I said already, it's the best opener of all time. The rest of the stuff that's on there, I give or take, really. It's the same as any other Mania from that time period, but you know, from like 8 onwards. Doink Bam Bam didn't really give much of a crap about. Savage Crush was alright, had a really good build actually. The end was a bit kind of kerfuffled with Crush falling over. Luger Yoko, you're right, was not good at all. Bret Yoko, not a great match. I'm not gonna at all, even any way, shape or form, bury your choice to put it in the top 3. I absolutely understand why you put it in the top 3, because the reason why you put it in there is roughly the same reason why I put 7 in my top 5, is because, you know, that, I think you said 9 was your first Mania, but obviously you're not going to put that in your top 10 because it sucks.
Yeah,
it sucks absolutely cockballs.
That's to a degree, that's where my perspective of not necessarily agreeing with you is.
Yeah.
I, like you said, 9 was my first, and I've got that dead last because there is no emotional attachment, because it's fucking crap.
Yeah.
Whereas 10 is absolutely awesome for multiple reasons.
For me, 7 was my first one in which I witnessed Savage and Wario, so that holds a special place for me.
Okay, well let me ask you a question here then, because you, I think in many ways, you, whether you deliberately mean to or not, you have denigrated our choice by saying that we're attaching a hell of a lot of nostalgia to it and arguing that we watched it when we were very young. But by the same token, you've still acknowledged that the two classic matches on there are still really good matches, and yet it still doesn't make your top 10. I don't see how you can have number 10 and readily acknowledge how great the two matches are, and the storytelling of the show, where it's poetic justice for Brett, and it still not make your top 10.
Yeah, look, I look in no way, shape or form, guys, am I trying to shit on the fact that you like this show. Not at all. I maybe go as far to say, maybe if I was still watching wrestling in 94, I'd have been blown away, just as you've seen that ladder match for the first time. I was a Bret Hart fan as much as anyone, so I can only assume that I would have loved this show and it would have been up there, but it wasn't. I saw it years later when I saw other ladder matches, and, like, you know, Bret Hart, Owen Hart, the significance of that at a time is lost watching it in 2000. You know, you have to put yourself into the mind.
And you're not the only person. And you're not the only person who has this opinion.
So it's just like how I saw it, because I saw 10 similar to 8, but being better. Obviously, because it was another two match card, but 10, all the under stuff didn't offend me as much as the stuff later on in 8.
Moving on to the feedback here, Loopy Date from TPWW Forum says, yes, love the love for WrestleMania 10. It was mid Wrestle Crapalooza with Doink Dinkman on a mission and the Quebecers, but it holds up remarkably well 21 years later. Razor Shawn changed the way the company looked at gimmick matches. Bret finally got his moment after the previous year's Hogan nonsense. The Savage Crush match was an entertaining little brawl, and of course, the best opening match in Mania history, and one of the five best matches in Mania history, period. Owen beating Bret clean, tremendous show. Funk Doc from Pro Wrestling Only says, I think there's a bit more to it than just the two famous matches. Really nice feel-good moment with Bret getting his revenge on Yokozuna from the previous year, and I also think Savage Crush is quite the fun little mid-card brawl. That show would probably make my top 10 too. Innovator from TPWW Forum says, being there live for WrestleMania 10 and only being 10 years old, I didn't appreciate how fucking good Owen and Bret was. Norman Smiley from TPWW, probably not the real guy, Norman Smiley. Mania's 9-13 go in the bottom on general principle of the company being in a horrible transition of not knowing how to put their key players in the right positions. 9 and 11 are the absolute pits, and to think 10 sandwiched in between those two was a home run is ridiculous. Anytime Vince McMahon is the voice of a mania, it also sucked. 9 and 11 are the pits, but this, I don't see how you can look at this show and not see the merit in terms of at least being out of the bottom 10.
Yeah, he's effectively penalising 10 for the fact that it comes after 9 and is the one before 11, and that's pretty much all there is to that argument there.
Yeah, but even I'll agree to that. I mean, definitely when you're looking at 9 through to 13, that 10 is by far country mile the best. And as I said before, even if you included 8 in that, 10 is better than anywhere between 8 and 13 and because of those two matches. And just, I think it would be much better from a match standpoint if they went with Bret Luger. To be honest, obviously, if they did do Bret Luger in the main event, then, well, that's the final fucking nail in Luger's coffin. You might as well fucking turn him heel on that show.
It was anyway.
There was like the final nail.
I think that it's especially telling for Lex Luger how the King of the Ring, he's not even on the show. He's not even booked to wrestle. He just comes out dressed like a barbershop pole to do a run-in for the Yokozuna match.
Oh.
Yeah. Moving ahead to number 2 on my list, we have WrestleMania 3 from 1987. This, again, subject of much controversy and discussion on various message boards, as I put this in number 2 at such a high spot. But to me, I don't know if it's... I guess it kind of goes back to your thing, Chase, about not seeing it at the time. So maybe the emotional impact isn't there, and I'll get to that point shortly, especially as we talk about what I've got as number 1. But to me, this is the template for the perfect WrestleMania. Vince McMahon could write down on a piece of paper every individual attribute and element to what he would want out of a WrestleMania, it would look like this show. It was a landmark, historic event in terms of where, you know, not just where it was in the WWF landscape at the time, but the landscape of the business at the time as well. Carl, you talked about in the previous podcast, I think it was the bottom 10, about how WrestleMania 1, which is the show they blow, was the one that really set the pace. WrestleMania 3 was actually the one that this was Vince McMahon getting his arm raised in the air in terms of his war with the territories. At this point, after this show, it was obvious it was the WWF's victory, and you would never see Watts, Fritz, even though there'd been stadium shows before, but in terms of something of this magnitude with this success, Fritz couldn't do it, Watts couldn't do it, Crockett couldn't do it, nobody else was going to do anything like this. They didn't have the elements that could put together something like this. And to me, it meant so much for the company. You had a landmark, historic main event in Hogan and Andre. You had the first classic match in WrestleMania history in Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage. The build for this show is among, even if it's in retrospect, among my favourites in wrestling history, where you got the great Hogan Andre, Piper's Pit, the Savage Steamboat ring bell incident. You got Piper and Adonis with the Flower Shop versus Piper's Pit stuff. The Hart Foundation British Bulldogs angle with Danny Davis costing the Bulldogs the championship, and all the heat they were getting on Davis at the time. The
build for this show was so good. You got Gorilla and Jesse on commentary, who were just awesome the whole way through the show. And in terms of matches, again, I enjoy Piper Adonis. I enjoy the Bulldogs and the Hearts in the six-man tag. Savage and Steamboat, obviously. It's the defining show of this boom period. There's some dross on this show. If you watch it again, if you're watching it with modern eyes, there are things like Butch Reed, Coco Beware that don't exactly jump off the page. I'll get you Rougeau's versus the Dream Team. You know, if I watched this show at the time, I might rate this number one. As a con, I can certainly see that this match is absolutely fucking terrible, Hogan and Andre. The point where Andre headbutts the ring post has me yearning for Sid's punches against Vader at the end of Mind Games in terms of credible action. But again, when you look at this, you can watch this and get wrapped up in the moment. It's the most perfectly done WrestleMania. It was perfectly booked. All the right results up and down the card. Everything that needed to be blown off was blown off. Absolutely love this show, and it means so much to the company.
Yeah, I think overall I haven't been casting the future significance as highly as you have, so, but I think you can't escape it with this show. Just like 14, you can't escape it. It's really fun watching it back. I mean, there's so like every match after match is fun, primarily maybe because of Jesse and Gorilla are fantastic, and you know, just absolutely piss all over commentary today. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
To show how guys can have fun and be entertainment while still calling a wrestling match. It's a different plan, and just I think there's one shot as well when they're in their you know skybox commentary position, and camera over the shoulder, and out of nowhere Jesse pops up the arm and goes, "Wow, pow! Look at the arm!" Fucking beautiful.
Topped only perhaps by Jesse Ventura kidnapping Matilda on the ring cart for that. There's that 3 second shot of Jesse holding the dog, which is just awesome.
Why is Jesse holding the dog? It doesn't matter. I probably wouldn't put it top three just because I think there's been so many good cars with deep outstanding matches, but top five absolutely. It's still hella fun. Even the main event's fun. Andre, looking at what Andre was good at, and similarly Hogan, I get so many mannerisms selling Hogan, underrated in that respect. It's a fun match, and the crowd, it's not an attitude crowd, obviously. It's not a modern crowd, it's very old school crowd,
very emblematic of the era.
Yeah, absolutely. It is a snapshot of pro wrestling in the 80s kind of thing. You got Steamboat Savage, which is again
glorious.
It is glorious, but I'm not sure if you've mentioned this card before about the not paint by numbers, but the Savage way of putting this match together. And maybe it's me knowing that watching it back, but it does come through at certain points when it's maybe just slow down, bam bam bam, but that's the match as well. It's supposed to be different, that's why it's, you know, it's a state of the art match during 1987.
Yeah,
but I'd mark it out of the top three just on I think there's been some manias with many good matches. This hasn't.
I don't really think there's much I can add to what Liam's already said, because I also have it at number two, and I don't think I could have made a better case on my best day. I love the build to a lot of the matches on the show. Just one of the other little tidbits to the Andre Hogan build, where they had the custom-made belt for Andre just to play that up, and Piper on one of the Piper's pits saying this conversation with Hogan, they don't think you can win.
Yeah, it's just, you know, brilliant.
It's fantastic.
Heenan's press conference as well is great.
Even the start where Hogan's almost begging not to have the match, you know, no Andre, please, we're friends. So I think it's absolutely
Andre
brilliant.
Gets the smaller trophy than Hogan does. Yeah, it's awesome.
Another one that you didn't mention, actually, just off the top of my head, the Jake Honky
build
freak of the guitar shot that nearly cripples Jake Roberts, allegedly.
Before drugs would do the same thing.
Yes. I think a really enjoyable show. You mentioned some of the good stuff there with the six man.
I may have undersold that. I really enjoy that match.
The Piper's the Piper Adonis match, which is billed as Roddy's retirement match at the time. How little did we know?
Crowd's rabid for that too.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Well, you've got the guy who jumps in the ring to hug Piper. Nice. I've got to say, I absolutely love Harley Race at this show.
Oh,
Harley Race
machine
bumps like a madman for JYD. And just because Kieran mentioned a couple of little comedy bits there, I can't let it go without mentioning Bob Uecker for his great line during the midget match where he says, "There's plenty of beaver."
I don't I'm going to give a JYD one as well when he's doing his promo and he's asking me, he's going to become the king, as sure as I'm black and as the day is light or something like that. I'm going to win.
No, I've got to reference Steamboat Savage just quickly, because to me, when you're talking about greatest matches in company history, for me it's up there. I understand your point, Kieran, about the sort of the way Savage would construct his matches and the way everything was planned out to the point of ad nauseum, but the pace at which they wrestle, I think, is just phenomenal. You know, you can almost see it in the way that Earl Hebner is blowing out of his arse at the end of it all.
Yeah, I just want to preface that. I mean, the fact that they're working their ass off and going 100 miles an hour, that's the whole point of the match as well. So it's a minor thing. It's just knowing it in retrospect is kind of a...
I can see how that would affect it completely. And finally, just to top it off, as Liam said, and it is the one that puts them over the top. It makes them the established national powerhouse to the point where they would never look back. You know, within 18 months, Jim Crockett's sold up. Watts gone by the end of 87, if I'm not mistaken. And the greatest example of that is the fact that the success of Mania 3 means that Vince goes with Survivor Series,
yeah,
and warns the cable companies that if they choose to show both the November pay-per-views, Survivor Series and Starrcade, they won't get Mania 4. I want to say two-thirds. The majority of pay-per-view carriers don't carry Starrcade 87. It bombs, and it's really the death knell for Jim Crockett. This WrestleMania is so vital for the future landscape, for the next 10 years almost, before WCW finally makes a real go of it. It's so important. I've got to say, I agree with Liam wholeheartedly, and I have it at number two as well.
I don't have this quite as high. I got it at number four.
Around Kieran, has it? Same,
yeah,
same
yeah,
kind of
yeah. I'm pretty happy where I placed it. I mean, you talked about the build, in which I think no one was more key than Heenan in that build. The work he does all the way through the show with everyone is just a star.
Exactly, with
absolutely.
Harley and Hercules as well.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, and also when you were describing the with the Hogan Andre, how important Roddy Piper was as well in a lot of those angles. Piper was just absolute fucking gold at this time period as well. You know, the whole, like, you're bleeding there, Hulk, you know, and it's just like with the crucifix and everything. It's all fantastic, you know, and you already described about, you know, the ring bell with Steamboat and so on. It's a weird one with this one. As I said, obviously, I wasn't watching wrestling at the time, so this is retrospective. And I was watching it with you, yeah, all the way through. And when you look at the card, and I won't go into too much detail, but when you look at the card, it doesn't, a lot of it doesn't spell out like, holy shit, this is like a, you know, a top five card of all time. But it is. It's a really entertaining show. Whether it's all like some of the, what you'd consider to be dross isn't, it's just all entertaining. I mean, I even get like a certain amount of enjoyment from watching, you know, King Kong Bundy, you know, kick midgets' asses. You know, it's just like, that's just,
that match sucks.
It sucks. But it's always entertaining, because I didn't even comment on, you know, on when we were talking about WrestleMania 23 about Kennedy doing the was it the plunge on freaking Hornswoggle, which is like my mark out moment. Kill a fucking midget. I mean, you already freaking claimed it, because I was waiting for you guys to finish to turn around and say about how great Harley Race's bumping was in the Junkyard Dog
the
match.
The headbutt off the apron.
Oh, the headbutt. Harley, you crazy bastard, I love you. It's just like, who would fucking do that? It's just only Harley. Yeah, I'm with, Roddy Piper, Adrian Adonis is just such a heated match. Roddy Piper's just excellent in that.
I love Adonis. Adonis is awesome.
Oh, yeah. Adonis's bumpiness is fantastic, you know. It's just, like, truly underrated.
Oh, he was great.
And Piper was just great in this. And you know, they did do the gimmick at the end of the hair as well, which is fantastic. I agree with you on the six-man tag. I mean, fucking hell, Danny Davis had heat. And stuff. Yeah. He had heat, and that was just really well worked.
The best cocky dickhead strut.
doesn't he just scream Vincent Mann's wet dream?
Yeah. He was just the attire as well, almost bordering on almost Kaufman-esque, isn't it? With the fucking white T-shirt on and everything. Yeah. And Hogan Andre, not the greatest match in the world, but the historical significance of it is just, well, it's it. It's number one. It doesn't matter if you like Austin Bret Moore or the ladder match, how much it means to you, because in terms of the history books, this is the one that they keep churning out over and over again, that they keep showing as being the most important Mania moment of all time.
Do you think this is the most famous match in WrestleMania history?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the one being most replayed.
Just another little check mark in the box.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm not even going to start on freaking Savage Steamboat, which is like my second favourite Savage match of all time. I mean, what are you going to say about that? world class, fantastic, stole the show for a great many years. It's WrestleMania 3. 1 and 2 were just practice runs. This was the first WrestleMania.
That's very good point, well made. Moving on to people's thoughts here. Tiger Rick from the UK Fan Forum says, you've obviously gone high on historical significance because 3 and 14 would be nowhere near the top 5 otherwise. 3 is a one match and great stare down show. Jim Bob from F4W says, I don't get the love for 3 other than the setting. The undercard ranged from crapola to passable. The main event was a huge match, but it sucked. So really, it's all about Savage versus Steamboat from a wrestling standpoint, and that is vastly overrated. Dylan Waco from Pro Wrestling Only. On 3, I get why you would have it number 2, and I enjoy the show as a whole more than a lot of people do, but if we are talking about pure in-ring aesthetics, I don't know if it even makes the top half. That said, I agree that it almost has to make the top tier just based on its significance. I think more than any other show, it illustrates the challenges of a list like this, where you are trying to balance a multitude of factors in making your assessment. If you weigh business, significance, etc. heavily, then it's almost impossible to leave out of the top 5, and a very strong argument could be made that it has to be number 1. If you weigh the artistic end heavily, it's a middle-of-the-pack show.
Dylan, that is an excellent email. Please feel free to email the show anytime.
Triple G from WrestlingForum.com says, without this event, WrestleMania wouldn't be what it is today, bottom line. The line that I've always used to describe is that WrestleMania may have been born in 85, but it came to life in 87. WrestleMania, as you know it today, owes its existence to this event. Because of Hogan Andre, that was how they got the blueprint to promote huge WrestleMania main events. Because of Savage Steamboat, the way matches were worked in North America was altered, and you can still see the fingerprints of that match and all over others today. And because of the success of this event, WrestleMania was elevated to a much higher standard than it had been before. So with those last couple of emails, that's a pretty stellar argument for WrestleMania 3 in this spot and possibly higher. And so that leaves only one, and that is, in my opinion, WrestleMania 17 from 2001 at the top of my list as the best WrestleMania of all time. After the stellar argument that we all made, I feel, for WrestleMania 3 in its position, I feel that WrestleMania 17 has a bit to go now, but to me, this show just absolutely tips over the top. As much as WrestleMania 3 was the defining WrestleMania of that boom period, this is the defining WrestleMania of this boom period. It looks like it should. Everything feels like it should. Austin Rock on top, and it's just an absolutely fucking great match. I love this match so much. Angle and Benoit is fantastic, something completely different from what everything was going on at the time. This was the start of the Angle doing the amateur wrestling stuff with Benoit. It was just fucking great. Love that match. TLC 2 is a fantastic match as well, as a stunt show. It was everything you're hoping for, and it had high expectations going in. The McMahon street fight was wildly entertaining, another match where Vince McMahon completely overachieves and is much better suited here in the middle doing the soap opera stuff, but it's a really, really good match. The gimmick battle royal was fun nostalgia. The hype videos going into this show with My Way, we'd be remiss not to mention, even just away from the Austin Rock video, which is the one that everybody remembers, but they did so many of these My Way videos building on the TV leading into WrestleMania. It felt so big before it even came. Austin Rock was anticipated for months since Austin came back. I just absolutely love this show so much. Top to bottom, it's my favourite show to watch in wrestling history. But, and this is where the debate comes in terms of negatives, there's China. So you got that.
Hey!
No, this is awful. But when we're talking about historical significance, and we're talking about place in the landscape, and I've held back other WrestleManias like 24 a little bit back based on the fact that the aftermath was a detriment to the business. As much as I love this show, the final 5 minutes of this show did a fantastic amount of damage to the WWF, and I feel if I ignored that in talking about how much I love this show, it'd be a complete injustice. It has to be. With WCW dying this week, with Austin turning heel, this is the noticeable end of the company being on absolute fire. Nothing on WrestleMania 3 hurt the future of the business like Austin's heel turn did at WrestleMania 17, but to me, the good on this show is just so good. It's just a period of sustained excellence. Paul Heyman and Jim Ross on commentary are out of this world. It's symbolic of a great period. It's the best show of this period of time. I think it's the best WrestleMania in history. As much as WrestleMania 3 stands out as the perfect WrestleMania on paper, this is the one that, to me, whether it's because I watched this one live or not, just jumps off the screen and absolutely has me hooked. Anytime I watch it, I feel the same way. Love this show.
Yeah, number one for me. I see, I'm very interested. You go so high on with 3 based on the pros coming out of it, but still have X7 at
number one despite the massive negative.
Yeah, but it's gives a fuck, because at the end of the day, this is the best WrestleMania of all time. So this is where I give my little preface that if it's good, it'll bump something up. If it's bad, it doesn't hurt it, because a pay-per-view,
this being the post show,
yes, because at the end of the day it's the build up to sell that show, not anything going after that. In theory is to build for, say, the Mania down the line or the year ahead. A Mania is the culmination, and this is more than the culmination of a year. This is the culmination of the Attitude Era. This is the culmination of a wrestling war, as you say, with companies dying left, right and centre. It's everything delivers. You get, like, the hardcore match was fun.
Yeah.
Even Raven got run over, didn't he, with a golf cart. That was good stuff.
Nearly lost power to the building.
I mean, this... just fantastic show. Triple H, Undertaker, completely overlooked.
Yeah, overachieved.
Overachieved and completely overlooked. That fucking heel turn by Austin was...
It's so weird to watch.
I think being in the... as a self-contained show, everything leading up to, so the end of, when the lights go out on the show, that's the build and everything, that's the culmination. That's the culmination. They get away with it because he's still cheered in the show anyway. He's not... But that's probably why it doesn't work. I mean, for me, it's not... A lot has been said, like, this disillusioned a lot of Austin fans, is, you know, turn people away. It wasn't that, for me, as simple as him going heel turn people off. I think what Austin going heel, it showed Austin is just another wrestler who can go back and forth and do a story. Austin was real for so long. He was... That's why he was different. Steve Austin, he was... modern day Dusty Rhodes in a different form and different body. He's just, when you just flop him and you shit on everything that he stood for as a character,
and he shakes hands
it's
with
it's not just the story, it's, I think, as a believability, Austin is, he's just another wrestler. And I think it took a long time through doing stuff like Tough Enough and even the heel stuff to get his personality over to where he's got kind of back up to that kind of above a wrestler status today. I think it absolutely, it's, I think in the prestige stakes, he took him down at a level.
I think that's the crux of that. It's not in any way that I'm defending the heel turn, but it's one thing to turn heel, it's another to do so in the way of shaking hands with Vince and pretty much just almost flushing down the toilet what has been the premise of the last 2 years of your company.
And probably was a reason for a lot of those fans becoming fans in the first place, those casuals.
Yeah, it's the feud that drew them all back at sort of early 98. That being said, I fall into the same category of, as much as it's a negative, it's not enough of a negative to affect my enjoyment of the show, and it's not enough of a negative to knock it off the top spot. I absolutely love the card. There isn't anything on there I hate. Yeah, the hardcore match is all... It's the sort of plunder you expect from a hardcore match, but you can still watch it and enjoy it. The way the crowd are slowly brought into the Angle Benoit match, the way they're slowly rising in as they play that sort of game of one-upsmanship in the amateur wrestling, I think is brilliant. Austin Rock, whilst I'm no fan of the ending, I think the match as a whole is brilliant.
That's superb.
Absolutely brilliant. And I think it's the best match they've ever had.
Agreed.
And just one fun point. How refreshing is Paul Heyman on commentary? after so 2 years of stale Jerry Lawler piss poor jokes, Paul Heyman is absolutely fantastic. I love this show. I couldn't agree more with it being number one.
With that said, I believe, Kieran, you put this at your number one too, your top spot.
Yeah, I'd absolutely. It's the benchmark. It's, yeah. It's, for me, it's everything. The grandiose, great matches, stars at the peak. Yeah, definitely.
And now for the debate. I know that Mr. Chase, you do not have this at number one. I'm going to turn the microphone over to yourself.
I'm going to try and rationale why it's not my number one. It's not in my top five either. I agree with all you guys. We all know what the problem was with Austin turning heel, and it's just like, it's just the most ridiculous fucking decision you could make. When, like, why would you turn your top babyface heel, especially when your second, very close, like, wafer thin next babyface is going as well? There's something about this show. I mean, you guys just, you described a couple of ways of describing the show, saying, like, it's the height of the Attitude Era. I personally didn't see it as the height of the Attitude Era. I didn't see it as the end of the Attitude Era. I saw it as the beginning of the decline. That's how I saw it, and that's why I can't put it as number one. It's why I can't put it in the top five, is because I don't see the overall positive of the show like you guys did back then. At the time, if I go back to like me when I was 17, I guess, watching this, this little kind of like decisions I didn't like. You know, I already briefly on other podcasts described, I didn't like the fact that the two guys who were carrying the company through 2000, Rock and Triple H, last on this show. I understand why they did, but at the time, and technically still do as fans of the two from that time period, I don't get why they did that. It's just that I thought Rock does. I know Rock's leaving. But it's like at the time, it was just I didn't know that. I didn't know Rock was leaving.
Yeah, but you just said watching it back, you still think that.
Yeah, I understand why he left, but I still wanted him to fucking win because I'm a Rock fan. But it's
how
just
the fuck do you end a show in Texas with Rock winning? If they're shitting on the show, it's not going to be a good feeling at the end of the show. If in an ideal world, just think about it. Then, Rock going over. And then he goes away, and then Austin just stews for a year because he got beat, and it's the series is 1-1. He got beat in Texas, and he's demanding Rock to come back to kick his ass. And then Rock was back as a heel at 18. Mm. He only fought Hogan, and it was throw away. He was a heel anyway, and then that's the rubber match. Yeah, that'd have been. That's a great long term story. But even on the night, if Rock goes over, I don't know how you send the people home happy. So
on the night, obviously the obvious story is you send the two. You know, you have the two Texans win. It wasn't necessarily that I don't think the two Texans should have won. It's more like I don't think those Rock and Triple H should have lost. It was just that's what bothered me. I loved 2000 so much. Those two were the guys, and then in the end, they just did the job to the two previous guys.
99.
And from 99, and it's just like, but 99 was worse. And then little kind of like other things that were there, like, you know, Kurt Angle being in a good match, but being quite far down the card when the previous month he was champion, and I just saw that as a big demotion for him. I just thought, like, well, he's just been your champion for the last 4 or 5 months, and that's where you've put him. In a good match with a good opponent, yeah, but that's where you've put him. Like, you know, they put Jericho, who was hugely over in 2000. I'm sure they did their best to try and scupper that, Triple H and so on, but he was hugely over, and he's in the opener against William Regal. I didn't buy into that Intercontinental match. There's just key people who were big in 2000. They weren't used, in my opinion, to the best of their ability. They weren't paired off as well outside of Rock Austin. I thought Triple H would have been better off facing somebody else. Undertaker would have been better off facing somebody else. And it's just this overall feeling that I have of the show where I enjoyed the in-ring action. It's a great show. But just those questions about people's positions on the card, the pairings of the matchups that I didn't like, and I just felt negative about the show. And I just left that show not thinking, oh man, that was the height of the Attitude Era. I left thinking, oh fuck, well I can't wait for Backlash. And guess what Backlash was? It sucked dick. What happened to Judgment Day? It sucked dick. And then we got the Invasion, which I was waiting for, and the initial invasion pay-per-view was pretty decent, but then look at that, 3 months later, sucks dick. I understand what you guys think of it as the best thing ever. I don't. I actually connect it to the decline that we've been living through ever since.
Alright, getting to the feedback now. Loopy Date from TPW Forum says, it's hard to argue with 17 as the best ever. Austin Rock had a great match, even if the Austin heel turn wasn't everybody's cup of tea, I'll say. Undertaker Triple H put on one of the first good streak matches. The TLC match is probably the best tag match in Mania history. Angle Benoit, Jericho Regal, hell, even Vince and Shane was great. Top to bottom, this is definitely the best Mania, even if nostalgia makes me like 10 more. Shane O'Mac version 2 from the UK Fan Forum says, my top would be WrestleMania 17, because it epitomizes the three-ring circus mentality at its very best. Pure wrestling in Angle and Benoit, soap opera drama in Vince and Shane, signature WWF main event style in Austin and Rock, crazy stunts and high flying in TLC, comedy in the gimmick battle royal, and chaos in the hardcore match. Whatever you enjoy pro wrestling for, Mania 17 has it. And Vito Cruz from TPWW Forums to wrap up the feedback today, I'm struggling to see WrestleMania 17 ever getting dethroned, honestly. It capped off the hottest period in wrestling, loads of good matches, and the crowd was red hot for everything. Even the low card matches that weren't meant to be anything big, like the RTC versus the APA and Taz, still did its job to get the crowd into it. The only bad match per se was the Battle Royal, but that really doesn't count. Yes, the match itself was short on the entrances, but the entrances were the entire point. It was about taking a trip down memory lane. Although very good Manias are certainly possible in today's landscape, Mania 30 is in my top 5. I'm not sure a Mania will ever be as complete as Mania 17. So that pretty much wraps it up in terms of all of our opinions and the opinions of yourselves as well. In doing a list like this, the one thing that I absolutely love about the last three podcasts that we've done
is the fact that this is one of the very few things, talking about the ranking of WrestleManias, that absolutely everybody has a completely different opinion on. And you don't get many topics like that, so this has been a hell of a lot of fun to discuss. With that said, thank you very much for listening. If we didn't get to your feedback this time, I apologise. But for G. John Chase...
I actually forgot Rob Schneider went to WrestleMania 21.
Rob Schneider goes WrestleMania goes derpy derp.
For Carl Jones.
Nobody cares about Rob Schneider.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
Coming for you, Rhonda.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here.